honorable members, the chairperson of the board of Land Bank, the CEO and the chief, you are welcome to the meeting. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister of Agriculture. We're told that the minister is joining us. Still committed with some other issues. We want to acknowledge the apologies from Honorable Gavekulu, who's attending another committee meeting. Apology from DG Mike Mulengani. Honorable Ben, you are old. Honorable Mandela is running late. So Honorable Maloi is running late. Both of them will be joining us. So these are the apologies for today. Honorable Ben, what is the time?
Chairperson, yes. Morning, Chair. Thank you for the welcome and good morning to everyone. May I just request, Chair, I can recall me asking a question to the Minister in the past about the charges against the DG, that's now the current DG again. I'm still waiting for that. I don't think it must just fall away, because I was asking what charges was brought against the DG, but I don't think the Deputy Minister is here. You can take notes of that. I still want that. Thank you, Chief.
But you are out of order, Honorable Singh. I'm acknowledging the apology. We are not discussing. So you are out of order. Thank you very much. So there is another apology from Honorable Kruka. Will not be able to come to the meeting. And I've seen Malanga is here, Land Bank is here, Savak, not here. Thank you, Honorable Members. This is a continuation of the meeting that we held on the discussion on the APPs and strategic plans of the department, and we have invited Land Bank because we realized that the department is allocating money to Land Bank, so we invited Land Bank to come and brief us on their work on the allocation that they've received. And we want to take this opportunity to welcome Chairperson and your team and hand it over to yourselves to take us through your presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you for affording us the opportunity of interacting with you on the lending activities of the Land Bank with regards to emerging farmers. Without much ado, I'm going to introduce the team. On my right is the CEO, T.P. Nchosho, and on my left is Ms. Soundi, the Executive Manager, Strategy and Communications. And on the other side is Mashumi Mzaidumi, the Company Secretary. Ms. Konehadi Gugushe, the Executive Manager for Risk Management, will be joining us shortly. I'm told she's in the building trying to find her way to this venue. My name is Arthur Mulodo, the chairperson of the Land Bank. Chairperson, let me just provide in some few minutes some context to our discussion. I'm normally usually confronted by various stakeholders and emerging farmers with this persistent question: why are you not funding us below your cost of capital? In other words, why are you not providing us with cheap money? And I think we need to acknowledge that in answering that question, there are certain issues that need to be taken into consideration. Firstly, we are not a deposit-taking institution. We don't have access to cheap capital. And that on its own present some challenges. But the question put differently would be, given that you acknowledge this constraint that has been placed by you on you by your funding, by your cost of funding, what measures are you putting in place to ensure that the status quo doesn't remain, that you structure things differently to accommodate emerging problems? And I think this presentation, to a large extent, demonstrates the type of structuring activities that are being undertaken by the team to deal with those constraints that are being faced by emerging farmers. Emerging farmers basically confront three issues. One, it's access to affordable funding, that's funding at lower, cheaper interest rates. They don't have collateral, they don't have equity to put in the business. So if these things are not structured properly, you end up with highly leveraged deals, or the level of debt in this that's carried by this transaction not sustainable to the extent that they would be able to service the debt that's being provided. So the CEO would be demonstrating in concrete way how we obviate those challenges that are faced by emerging farmers. Ms. Koneku Gushi has just joined us. She's at the back. So, Chairperson, without much ado, I'm just going to hand over to the CEO to proceed with the presentation.
Chairperson of committee, members of committee, Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Honorable Telezi, my colleagues from the departments and the provinces, thank you very much for the opportunity. We realize time is really limited. It's 45 minutes. You know, when we received this invitation, we met as EXCO and we said, right, we probably have about 3 hours with the committee and we are really going to go to town in terms of addressing the land bank's imperatives and so on. Then the agenda came and it was 45 minutes and I had to cut a 90-page presentation to about 20 pages. But we really appreciate the opportunity. Slide number one, Chair, and before us on the screen, slide three, we summarize here that the letter that was sent to us specifically said, address your financing support initiative to the developing farmer or emerging sector. Talk to any related programs in that regard. Give an overview of how the land bank itself is funded and where its funding sources are. Any funding programs that you undertake as land bank on behalf of DAF, provide an overview of those, and specifically provide a report back on the Agribee fund. So that was the scope of works that was provided in terms of the letter of invitation sent to us. We always like, Chairperson, in the next slide, slide four, to start off by reminding every forum where we present that the land bank derives its activities from its mandate as articulated in the Land Bank Act, which was amended in 2002. And really, its points and its thematic points really are around promoting ownership of agricultural land. It's about promoting agricultural entrepreneurship or farming. It is about supporting the sector generally in terms of productivity improvement and investment. It talks to sustainability there in terms of sound environmental practices as well as developmental impact in terms of employment creation and so on. We always highlight this particular slide, Chair, to make a point, and that is that as an institution we have a mandate to support established agriculture and the sector generally on the one hand, but in the second instance we also have this massive task of driving transformation at the same time. So it's a dual mandate in that sense that we have to address both imperatives for food security as well as driving transformation, development and empowerment in the sector. seems to be a slide missing in here, Chairperson, but anyway, we'll come to that. I just wanted to mention that specifically, we need to be aware, Chairperson, that the mandate of the bank places emphasis on commercial scale agriculture. It might be at a smallholder level, it might be at a mid-sized level, or at a large scale. The mandate of the bank does not provide for subsistence agriculture, which is agriculture right at the bottom of the pyramid, which is not necessarily driven to produce surplus for market for output. So sometimes we get misunderstood as an organization where I go to a village somewhere and there's a person who owns two cattle that they milk for family subsistence, and they reckon maybe the land bank could assist them. Yes, to the extent that they have aspirations to grow to commercial scales, then yes. But I just wanted to make a point that our mandate doesn't cover subsistence agriculture. It covers smallholder agriculture, mid to large agriculture, as well as large mega agriculture and agricultural corporates. Chairperson, coming to the subject now of what are we doing with regards to financing developing or emerging agriculture. The team that is here, including the chairman of the board, we all joined the land bank in 2015. So we've been there just over 15 years. But I really have to take the committee back a little bit, just a little bit. There is a book which is very interesting, which is written about the history of the land bank. It was written in 2012 because the land bank was formed in 1912. It is 100 years of existence of the land bank. And in that book, there is a quote which I show on the screen which says, in 1996, the land bank started introducing financial products supplemented by government incentives to help establish emerging farmers in the agricultural sector. This, as you can see, Chairperson says, this started in 1996. However, in the next slide, Chairperson, we need to make this admission or acknowledgement that unfortunately, as we arrived there in 2005 and we started looking at data, we found it difficult to find realistic and reliable data regarding how much money exactly was disbursed to the emerging developmental sector for that period from around 1996 to 2011. In the graph that you see before you, based on our data analysis, it was from around 2012 that we are able to validate and say when we look at the entire portfolio, at that particular time in 2012, of the approximately just over 22 or 23 billion total loan book at that time, approximately a billion or so could be classified as funding that was advanced to, let's use the word for purposes of this committee, to black farmers, African colored Indians, developmental sector. So that is so in other words, we have a data limitation for that period. But as we go forward, Chairperson, we want to make this particular point that in the year 2009 to the period 2011, it was a rescue period, but around 2012, really, that is where in our data we found that there was the beginning of a coherent and a very focused effort around the land bank advancing money to the developmental sector. This was seen by the launching of this specialized unit, which was called Retail Emerging Market, REM as it was called. And the way this particular unit went about its business, it was really very simple. What the unit would do, it would provide a wholesale facility. So in other words, a bulk facility would be given to a competent institution, and that competent institution would then on-lend the money to emerging stroke developmental farmers. I think one of the very first projects that is very much known is a sugarcane initiative in Malelane, which is called Akwanze, where there was a partnership established between the land bank and TSB, Transvaal Sugar Board. We created a special purpose vehicle. We advanced an amount, I think it was somewhere in the region of about initially 100 million or so. And then what that special purpose entity does, it lends the money in smaller amounts, 5 million here, 10 million here, to a number of emerging farmers. But here is the important part. The important part is that that lending program goes with a number of technical support services. So there's agronomy services in terms of helping the farmers there who are small farmers on average. I visited the project. They farm on anywhere between 5 to 10 hectares of land. Agronomy services, choice of inputs, help with mechanization, and then eventually once the product has grown to a point of harvest, it is then harvested and then it is bought in full by Transvaal Sugar Board in an offtake agreement. But the second point that I really need to emphasize, Chairperson, is the point that is made in that slide, and that is that when this program was undertaken, it was supported by a subsidy from the Department of Agriculture. That is why this special purpose lending entity that I'm referring to could only lend the money at a rate of about 4% to the beneficiaries. We could only do so because we had a subsidy that catered for the differential between our cost of capital and the money that was lent out to the beneficiary farmers. So as you see in this graph before you, so it was from a period around 2012 when there was a rapid growth, really, although from a small base, of the lending to the emerging farmer sector. About 100 million worth of lending in 2012, growing to around 489 million, the cumulative number in 2015. And from there, that particular line, that dotted line that you see, we always draw that to say that was when this management team that is before you joined the bank, beginning of 2015. And we tried, and we tried to rapidly and effectively, we almost doubled the volumes of lending through the REM program from 504 million in the closing of the financial year 16 to just less than a billion, 964 at the end of 2017. And the numbers are shown below there. But this was underpinned by a specialized program that is associated with technical support services, and the second crucial success factor was the subsidy that went with it. And then in the next slide, Chairperson, we just mentioned that this is what the picture then looks like over that particular period in terms of the total lending of the bank. This is a more than 100-year-old bank, and really its picture has to be looked at on a cumulative basis. So in total, in terms of the total loan book portfolio, the lending in red there to the developing or emerging farmer sector growing from around a billion rand in 2012 to just over 2.3. This includes the REM program and the other lending activities which were undertaken through the branch network of the bank and so on. So we have a definition there to the right of the screen, Chairperson, where we try and say developmental or transformational lending has to be, from where we sit, be seen as enterprises that are, one, either 100% owned by black in the sense of African, colored, and Indians, in the second instance, either majority owned, in other words, 50% plus, or in the third instance, which either have a triple BEE level 4 and above. And recently, our board of directors has said this third criteria should be accompanied by another qualification to say it should be at least level 4 BEE plus a minimum ownership level of at least 30%. So just to repeat, either 100% wholly owned or majority owned
or
minimum level 4 broad-based BEE with a minimum 30% shareholding, because the board, from a strategy and a direction point of view, has asked us to place a lot of emphasis on the ownership dimensions. So we have about 30 branches throughout the country through which we lend money, but we also lend money to larger entities in a sort of empowerment format. Chairperson, the next slide, we need to spend a bit of time on it because it's very interesting in a sense that it sketches a picture from around 2015. As I said, we, the leadership sitting here, joined in 2015, and it also takes a forward-looking perspective. If we look at the graph before us, and sorry I don't have a pointer, I could be pointing, but the first dotted line that goes down from around 2015, we indicate there that we closed the books with a total loan book somewhere in the region of, in 2016, 36 billion plus 2.5 billion is how much? Let's call it 39 billion, almost 40 billion, of which about 2.5 billion, the numbers there are not percentages, they are rand values, of which about 2.5 billion was money lent to developmental stroke transformative black-owned entities as per the definition that I've just given. The point we're making, Chairperson, is that we are trying our best. Closing to the year 27, we closed at about 4.9 billion, nearly double that figure. So in the period from 2016 to this current financial year, we have virtually doubled the rand value money that we have advanced to entities that are in the developmental transformative space as per the definition that I've given. That takes us to the second line, which is up to 2018, in other words, March of this year, 2018. The graphs following that are future-looking numbers, and that is our commitment that we have made in terms of the corporate plan, to say, again, in the next 2 years or so to 2020, we would like to see a doubling of our lending volumes to the developmental emerging sector from that 5.3 to about 10.8. And even further going forward to 2022, in order to transform the shape of this entire portfolio to approximately 30% of the total portfolio dedicated or assigned to the developmental stroke transformative sector. That's our aspiration in terms of the corporate plan that is being finalized between us and the National Treasury. I think the minister is due to sign it before the end of this month. It has already been approved by the board. So, in our view, very bold type commitments. I know the criticism will come to say, but this is not enough. But, Chair, we can only execute these strategies within the constraints of our resource endowment and so on, and I'll touch on that in the next slide. So the way we do business, Chair, in the next slide, just to explain, is that our delivery channels, we have a direct delivery channel in the form of, on the right, on the left-hand side of that screen, the branches, the 25 branches that we have throughout the country. Then we have two specialized teams at head office. It is the business banking team. They handle your mid-size type transactions. They normally handle transactions in the region of about 30 million, 50 million, probably up to 100 million or so. Then for the higher-end value transactions, we have the corporate and structured investments division. These are the teams that handle transactions of higher values. We have done 200 million, 300 million, 400 million type transactions, so they are handled by specialized teams. Then we work through our intermediary partners on the ground, the so-called SLA partners, sales level agreement. These are the co-ops, the old co-ops. Some of them have changed their formats to become private companies, but they are very essential and very crucial partners in the delivery equation of the land bank, because they give us a footprint. The land bank has approximately 450 staff members. These co-ops have 1,500 and so on and so on. They have additional services like agronomy services and technical support and inputs and so on. So we have partnership agreements with them through which we lend money. The challenge that exists there, and it has been acknowledged, and probably DM Buthelezi will remember this from his days in the National Treasury, the criticism being that these service level partners of ours, their level of lending to developmental farmers has not been adequate. The volumes are simply too low, and we are beginning to set targets, because the way it works is that we provide them with a wholesale facility. Let's say, for instance, we would give R1 billion to any one of them, and then they will pass it on to the agricultural sector on our behalf. But what we would like to see is them as well lending to the emerging and to the developmental and to the transformation sector, and that is not happening as good as it should. But strategically, we are placing pressure on these channel partners to do the right thing for transformation in this country. So it is a fact as it exists at the moment. I always like to place this screen on the this slide on the screen, Chairperson, to say, you know, the formula for or the configuration for really undertaking land transformation and agricultural development is a complex formula. Yes, the starting point is always land and land and land. To farm, like mining, you need a piece of land. But in addition to that, Chairperson, maintaining sustainability requires that adequate project planning should be undertaken. So in other words, second step in this slide of ours to say, determining the best possible use of the land and documenting a proper business case. I always say this to my friends, say, guys, just because I get a piece of land does not mean that I must pull the tractors in and the tractors must start digging soil. There is requisite expertise required to be able to determine, should this be a livestock farm? Is it best used for grain? Is it best used for horticulture, depending on the conditions of the soil, the area, the temperature and the atmosphere and things like that. So these are technical expertise that is required. At the level of investment and funding, really at the end of the day, any enterprise or any project can only be funded either by the equity of the owner or by the debt that the owner borrows from the market. Two elements of and we will demonstrate in the couple of slides coming that very often the problem that we run into is that it becomes difficult to grant 100% debt in the projects all the time. This is the point that Mr. Mulot was making, because if you can take a piece of land, 1,000 hectares, you do the calculations regarding the viability of that piece of land, and you get a particular revenue and cash flow profile, which then says this particular enterprise can only afford X amount of debt. So a black person comes to us, they are looking for 20 million, we do the calculations, we end up saying the affordability level from a debt perspective, we determine is somewhere in the region of 12 million. It means this black person has to go and get the rest of the money somewhere else from their pocket. And that's a constant problem that we run across, the equity deficit amongst our borrowers. And then we then have these other market support arrangements that are required. Let me just try and move fast, Chairperson, and say what then follows in the slides are a number of examples of the transactions and the models that we have tried to implement. Really, the essence of all these models, Chair, are that we try and combine a technical partner with the expertise, with the clients that we are trying to support, together with an offtake buyer. In the example that I made earlier on was a sugar company. And we create a project where there is funding, there's technical support services, There is also market access arrangements in order to reduce the risk profile of the project. So I don't think I should bore the committee with these finer details of these project structures that I indicated here, because it's a little bit of a lot of technical work. I'm sure the members will be advised by the advisors here in Parliament. But that's the essence of it. So we use financial intermediaries. We use value chain arrangement where, in this particular instance, this project on slide 13, it was done on traditional land. And there was a long-term lease that was arranged, and there was a company, which is a strong technical company that is involved in farming, and we brought together service providers, and we are farming a significant amount of land in partnership. So money alone is not enough. There is need for these support services to surround a project. In many instances, we do joint ventures or we facilitate joint ventures between existing commercial farmers as well as beneficiaries of either land restitution or individual emerging farmers. We try and broker those. And really, the intent is simply to try and have, say, let there be land, yes, let there be money, but yes, let there be technical services, let there be support as well as access to supplies, as well as defining the market access arrangements. That's why we try and strike these partnerships, and it takes time. We also did this particular one, which was an interesting transaction. It was one of those high-value transactions on slide 5, where it was a sort of a classic empowerment transaction where an empowerment black party bought a significant equity stake in the business, but the workers as well were included in the structure. But at the same time, the money that flowed into the business was then used to expand the venture. In other words, the money was used primarily to grow additional vineyards, to expand the dams which are on the property, to expand the irrigation systems on the property, in order to make the business bigger and stronger. And lastly, so I'm moving towards the end now. This slide shows the money that we have received from the Department of Agriculture over the past number of years. That is the Agri-BEE Fund. Let's go to this next slide, Chair. There were a whole host of problems between 2006 and 2014 about the Agri-BEE Fund. I think the problems are well known. Safe to say, in 2013, before our time, my predecessor CEO actually repatriated, sent back that amount of money that is mentioned there to the Department of Agriculture because there were all sorts of administrative complications. What I can say at the moment, and my colleague, the acting DG, is there, is that we are trying to reconstitute and repurpose and reconstitute the Agri-BEE Fund properly so that the money that we see here that the department allocates to the land bank on an annual basis, and as you can see, year on year, 33.3, 35.3, 36.7, and so on, can be properly used, can be audited. And we commit to sound governance. I mean, this particular organization, the land bank, really has done its best in terms of maintaining sound governance. And then, of course, the amounts that are received there under the WFF, DAF WFF, towards the bottom chairperson of this screen, is the money that I say was used to underpin the interest subsidy under that WFF program that we talked about earlier on. Then there is an additional, this year, this current financial year, an amount of 100 million rand that the department has transferred to the land bank. Our initial thoughts as the bank was that we would use that to continue to enhance our interest subsidy model, but we are in discussions with our colleagues. We think we are probably going to deploy this 100 million under the blended financing program that I suppose the committee might have been briefed about before, where we combine debt money and grant money to try and deleverage a project. In the example that I made earlier on, let's say somebody comes to us looking for 20 million, we are only able to provide them with 15 million, then we can draw out of this fund, maybe 5 million, in order to add in total the 20 million that the emerging farmer requires. So in other words, blending grant together with debt. That's the intended purpose of that facility. I've already talked on this particular slide. Very little has happened around this chair because there were problems. But when we get this right, I can promise we will accelerate the disbursements in this area. The funding of the bank, Chairperson, fundamentally, this is just a slide that shows that this bank has a sound credit rating. We get credit rated like our sister organizations, other DFIs, as well as the commercial banks. And as you can see, our credit rating, slide number 18, we have is very similar to what the private banks maintain. And this is testimony to the quality of the credit decisions that we make and the soundness of our risk management practices. The next slide, Chairperson, is probably the second last. This one which shows the various institutions like AFDB, African Development Bank, World Bank, EIB, European Investment Bank, KfW, the Germans, as well as the PIC. These are the various long-dated facilities. If you look at the column that says tenure, these are long-dated facilities that we have secured. We have signed agreements with this institution, and under the column that says total pipeline, Chairperson, at the bottom, the aggregate is a figure of 8.32 billion. We have access to that. It's a money that we can draw at any given time in order to finance the development sector. But what we would like to maintain, I'll show the slide now. Okay, the next slide shows money that we get not from these agencies, but the one that we draw by placing bonds with asset managers and fund managers in the South African market. We place a lot of, we raise a lot of money from banks themselves as well as the investor community. Some DFIs do and SOEs do place their excess liquidity through their treasuries with ourselves. So those are the two sources of money for the land bank. Money that we get from international development finance institutions such as the World Bank, the EIB, and so on, and then the money that we source locally from the capital markets. And this graph here on slide 20 shows the distribution of where we get money. We get 50% of our money from the institutional investor community in the country. And Chair, the next slide, slide 21, the point that Mr. Muloto was making earlier on. If you look at the bottom of that slide, cost of funding trends over the last 5 years, this is the cost of money. So this is the cost of capital for the land bank. It was around 5.79% in 2014, and the market moves all the time. As we sit here today, the cost of money for the land bank is somewhere in the region of about 8.7%. So the point we're making is, and when we lend money, we cannot lend money at any rates below our cost of capital. In fact, if anything, as you when you look at the information above, the way the pricing works is that we start first with our cost of capital, and we must add operating costs and risk premium and so on and so on. That is why very often we end up charging people 10% or 10.5% or 11%, and we hear a lot of complaints. But that is the nature of a banking organization. It has a cost base, and it has to cover its operating expenses so that it doesn't run into deficits. Because what happens is that if you don't price appropriately, we will erode the capital of the bank, and one of these days we will have to go begging in front of the National Treasury for capitalization, and I don't think any one of us wants to go there. So this is the cost profile of the bank. Chairperson, in conclusion, the point that we are making is that key constraints that we face as an organization is that our capital as an organization is quite thin. As I've indicated, a substantial portion of the money that we lend out to the sector we raise from capital markets and from international financial institutions. We don't have the benefit similar to departments that have get annual allocations and so on and so on. So this institution, and I know the Treasury is looking into this, but the National Treasury, as we know, has constraints, requires capital enhancement in order to increase its risk-bearing capacity. Again, remember, when we raise money in the second instance, there is a limitation to how much you can borrow, the so-called gearing limit. So the Treasury is always advising us and say, guys, yes, go ahead and raise money from the markets, but be careful not to overrun your borrowing capacity. We have already touched on the cost of capital. The fourth point, Chairperson, is that the insurance environment in this country is very difficult for emerging farmers. The premiums are very high. There is a proposal that we have talked about before, which is in the hands of both DAF and the Treasury at the moment, to say, could government consider some kind of an insurance subsidy scheme in order to bring as many farmers as possible under insurance cover. And then the fifth one is the issue of cooperation with the sector departments. Firstly, with DAF, I've already touched on the blended financing program that we are starting to implement now. With the DLR, or the Department of Land Reform, we have been having many discussions, but really this needs to progress to realization now, where many of the unutilized farms that have been acquired by the Department of Land Reform over many years can be released, and indeed can be brought to commercialization. We are willing to partner in that regard. The problem of water licensing is very problematic. There are many clients of ours that we have approved loan facilities for, but we cannot implement and pay out the loans because the water licenses are still outstanding. They are going through all the procedural issues. And again, I'm not casting aspersions. I'm stating a systemic problem that the nation knows very well, and in particular those who operate in this sector. The strategic enablers really that we need is, we need a partnership with the Department of Land Reform for increased land availability. Release those land parcels that are in the ownership of the department somehow, so that we can get on with the business of advancing developmental farming. Technical advisory services I've talked about. Market access support. We know, Deputy Minister, post-liberalization, many of the support instruments that were there to help farmers take product to market, like the marketing boards, were disbanded. So today, a farmer has to find their way to market. And really what we observe is that in certain instances, the value chains are very closed. Those who have been operating in the system for many years have their own operating arrangements, and new entrants very often find it difficult. Point number four, I've already touched on the complications or the difficulties of not enough own equity on the part of particularly developmental farmers, and the dispensation on water licensing. Chair, I missed the time by about a minute. thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable members, that was the presentation. You are welcome to interact with the presentation. Do you have anybody to add? Okay. Is that Honorable Mwazo, Honorable Stein, Honorable... let me write it down. Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Stein, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Chweu, Honorable Vandal, Vandal Honorable Papa, and Honorable Babama, and Honorable Mapanga, Honorable Mandela, Honorable Maluti. let's start with the Honorable Mwaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, and the leadership.
Maybe before you start, I just received a correspondence from the Minister that will not be able to attend the meeting due to the departmental obligation. So what has the Minister said? Just thought I must report on that one. Honorable Mwaza?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I was in a process of greeting, but I think that one has been hit. Just three questions, Chairperson, to the board and to the CEO. One is the issue of grants from government that you spoke about, that you are getting grants. My frustration is that after getting grants, you then issue loans. On those grants. I spoke about 4% interest rates. My question will be, these grants, is these grants from the government assist the sustainability of the land bank? Are you making profits out of these grants? Because you are giving it as a loan to the people. Number two, I asked the minister in another meeting that since we are as a country facing the problem of aging farmers, like any other sector, even academically, there's an issue of aging professors. He responded by saying, the deputy minister will correct me, that we have in the Department of Agriculture programs to attract young people to join the sector, the agricultural sector. Now, I want to know from your side that do you have a list of farms or farmers that you have loaned, which are owned by women and youth, as well as people with disabilities? Because I believe, Chair, the land bank, if they are getting the grants from government, their vision must be aligned to the vision of the country and of government. Do you have any units specifically created for these three sectors, youth, women, and disabilities? And how many, if you have, how many farms or farmers have assisted, which are wholly owned by these three sectors? And then maybe lastly, okay, one would want to know the role of the Department of Rural Development within the land bank, because we've been talking about the DAF funding you, DAF giving you grants. I just want to know the role of the land bank. Lastly, Chair, there is a current research, CEO, that in the country we have 88% failure rate of cooperatives. I want to note, because you also mentioned that to assist the cooperatives, if you can explain or give us tangible figures as to how many successful cooperatives you have assisted. By successful, I don't mean those who have funded and then they bought a tractor. I mean those who are now trading, have access to market, who are living, who are making living, and have created jobs out of your assistance. That is how I view the success of a co-op. One would want to know that. Whether are you doing that follow-up and monitoring and see that now we have funded this one to this stage, they are now supplying SPA, they are now supplying Woolworths, and so forth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Faye. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters. Chair, I've been listening carefully. There's a lot of discussions, and obviously we are dealing with a bank, so a lot of it has got to do with finances and the money of it. But I would like to find out more about challenges. I looked at the examples, and thank you for giving us these examples of the delivery models and the structures that you are using, because I think when the chair started, he mentioned that farmers mostly don't have collateral or equity, and that is one of the biggest challenges that I think that we are sitting with. So my question would be based on that. What is it that you would need? Because I looked at certain of these funding models that you linked here, on Ingonyama Trust, the CPAs and others. So for the bank to feel comfortable, what is it exactly that you are looking for? And I'm asking that question specifically because we are dealing with land issues, as you know, currently. So we cannot discuss things like expropriation. I'm thinking, if the state owns all the land, what would the risk be to the banks and other facilities like yourself? So what is it that the bank would look for before you can loan? And I know you've mentioned a few things there. That's fine, but we need to have certainty because we cannot have discussions and then at the end of the day all of our institutions then sit with a problem because we can't loan to anyone at the end of the day. So what would you look for specifically? Then it was interesting to see on one of the pages that you are mentioning specifically unutilized farms. We received an answer back as the DA to say that there are 4,600 farms lying in the Department of Public Works. Public Works is the owner of the land.
Public Works holds
the
hold
the land.
Hold the
yeah.
land in
yeah, yeah. For the state.
For the rural development, but
yeah.
The user is the rural development.
Yeah. Okay, well, in any case, it's a technicality, but I would wonder if it would at all be possible to find out what it would cost to recapitalize or to put that land under production. Because I think it's one of the questions that we've asked in the past to the Department of Agriculture. And I'm not even talking about that land. I'm just talking about land that we know that's currently there. Irrigation schemes, all of those things to put it into production, because I don't think anyone has done that to find out what would be needed for us to be able to do that. And then just linked to that, yesterday, and unfortunately I missed it due to hopefully I had another meeting, the AgriSA had a meeting with the transformational program, and I see that they say they have used 331 million Rand to train, develop, and assist 108,000 farmers. In the costing that you've done with the money that you've used over the last 10, 15 years since you started working with black farmers, what amount did you have to put in as a loan facility? And how many farmers have been helped during that time? Because I'm just trying to check, you know, what is the ratio? Because I'm always looking at what the department come and give us, how many billions is needed, and then, you know, we worried about how many farmers at the end of the day. And then the last one, during the drought, there was a scheme that the land bank helped farmers with. I just want to find out if all that money was taken up and whether any of those farmers are now currently struggling to make it. What percentage do you think or farmers will not make it due to the drought? Sorry, Chair, there was one. Last one.
No, you can't have more.
That's
time.
Fine.
Okay.
It's the
we'll see if we'll have time. You remember I told you that we have to go to the city today. Honorable Folsom.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairperson and members, and thank you for the presentation. My first comment is 24 years into democracy and you still got a Transvaal sugar board and you do nothing about it and you give them money. You must tell them part of the deal next time. Transvaal sugar board is offensive to all peace-loving South Africans. They must change and then you can carry on with your relationship there. My first question is, you know, if you were to continue investing in these outdated farming methods and types of farming, you know, we're really lagging behind in the way we farm in this country. you know, and this country is the only place where you get a farm in an overall. Other countries, farming is advanced. So I want to know, what incentive is there for farmers to bring innovative techniques into their farming methods and systems and processes, number one. Also, how much does the land bank invest in technologies that could assist farmers? You know, there's remote sensing, there's various things that can assist farmers, and companies that offer this could be invaluable to the farming processes. So how much money do you invest in that? Okay. Because, you know, and also, you know, I know you're still going to need land, but you could make even better use of land with innovative farming techniques. You know, China has got a farm in the middle of the city, it's a big building, and they produce a lot of food. So how much money do you invest in urban farming? Remember, urban farming has a lot of benefits. Less use of pesticides and all those nasty things that make food really bad. It's less freezing time, it's lower carbon footprint, it's more healthier, just got so much benefits. So how much money do you invest in urban farming in this country, and do you encourage urban farming? Because it also could bring more participants, and because farming is always going to be labor intensive, regardless as to how much technology we bring along, it's going to maybe, but you know, there are robots that can pick apples, but so we yet to see it be really successful. So agriculture is always going to be labor intensive, and even we have in urban areas, could also assist with the unemployment in urban areas. Okay, that's one of the benefits.
Last one.
My last question is: in 2014, your department took legal action against 1,560 farmers. More than 1,000 of these were black farmers. Okay, my first question is, okay, what do you do to prevent farms going to that state of where it becomes almost dysfunctional? And how often do you engage with these farmers, or do you just pick it up at the end of a certain period, now the money's due, and look, you've just totally messed up with taking this farm and... So I want to know what the process is and how much time and how much you invest in actually assisting a farmer to become successful before you actually pull the plug on as it is. Okay, so I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but I'm also saying, what do you do to prevent it from getting to that state where, you know, you've just given up and you realize that this guy's never going to cut it and, you know, your money has been mismanaged. So that's one thing, and also this was in 2014, so I want to know in terms of your current experiences now, are we having a reduction in the number of farms which you, or farmers you take action against, you know, and what you've done there. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Post, Honourable Chow.
Thank you very much. Mine is based on... I think the book says, let me go to the very one. It says, extending credit to emerging farmers, the book which you quoted. I haven't read the book. That's the disadvantage. I'm just using this quotation which you have outlined. But it says, extending credit to emerging farmers and changed the bank's funding profile after 1996. How was the bank funding South Africans before 1996? I'm just interested in that. And if it has changed, how has it changed that profile, except that then the percentage which you talked about is still very low. Can we go down to the percentage? I want to
just cut it in smaller pieces. I think taking into consideration that farming in South Africa is labor intensive, and it's also it's women that are farming those farms all over the country. In your job creation, I think in your objectives, the objectives of the land bank is to ensure that there is one, equitable ownership. How many African women farmers have you produced in that one? Land access, how many have been given land which you have acceded, assisted? How many women? I'm not talking about, and women are not homogeneous. There's white women, there's Indian women. We have been discriminated differently as Africans, as Indians and colored. How many in terms of your percentage? And those that are agricultural entrepreneurs which you have supported since, you said 20, I just want to challenge your employment since 2005, 2015 until now. Just that period, the three-year period which you were in charge. How many women have you ensured that they have equitable ownership? How many women have you ensured that they accept, they got access to land which you have assisted? And how many of those are entrepreneurs? And then in terms of growth, have you ensured that there is sustainability in those farms which you funded? The other thing that I also wanted to raise sharply was the issue of job creation. How many jobs have you created during that particular period for women in that particular period, young and old? And the farmers that you say you have assisted in traditional areas, I'm surprised that you're funding traditional areas, because all African traditional areas are located where there is no rain. There were reserves, all of them. You can't pick one and say, in this area, even the Ngonyama Trust area, it's dry. So how do you fund such reserved areas? The areas, the farms that you are funding, are they in the fertile land of South Africa where it was allocated for white farmers because of the raining areas? I don't know what do they call it, but in those areas it was fertile because it could rain in those particular areas. If you can show me the movement, if you want to transform the bank, it means that you must reverse the past. So you can't, I really, if I was at your position, I wouldn't find any reserve area, including townships. So I don't know, where did you find these farmers? It's not stated in the report. Unfortunately, I've got little knowledge of the department because I just came into the committee. But I don't know where you have funded these farmers so that I can go and check if you have funded them and how sustainable are they. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Van Dahl.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to know, as a bank, are you exposed to any risk for lending or funding to any of the Gupta companies, and specifically some and or the Freedom Farm issue? I would like to know that. And then, noting the recent land audit, how many of the farms that you are talking about that needs to be released can be up tomorrow if they are released? Can you give us a figure, more or less? And I'm talking of the land that is in the hands of government that has not been released up till now. And then, how many black farmers that you have helped, from small to commercial and from commercial to mega, how many and what was the cost of that? Can you quantify it? And then, are you using implementing agents? And if you are, can you give us their names, or and is it the same people that DAF is using? Thank you.
Me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. A few brief ones. One, CEO mentioned that you don't provide for subsistence agriculture. That's well understood. But now, the while DAF is having a program of commercializing the farmers, do you have any way of interacting with me in that program so that when they are commercialized, they become your clients? Well, I take it that your program is not aimed at eliminating, it's aimed at introducing more people, and therefore, do you have any way of getting those when they commercialize them to become your clients? Secondly, there is also this challenge of equity deficit. Well, on that one, maybe I wonder if there's any concrete proposal, or is there anything that needs to be corrected, or if there's maybe some legislation that should be reviewed. Maybe I don't think it's something to live with just forever. Thirdly, do you have any problem of repayment of the loans, and what would have been the cause of that? Because maybe the clients would be giving you some reasons. Lastly, do you know any perceived, not what you know of, sometimes perceived by someone else, of a corrupt transaction in the institution? Because if with this need of clean governance, that would be something to take home if we go that way. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the CEO of the Land Bank for a very concise but all-embracing presentation. Just a couple of questions. One of the objects of the bank, as per the Land Bank Act of 2002, is the promotion, facilitation, and support of equitable ownership of agricultural land, particularly to HDIs. Now, I would like to know, how do you lend to development farmers, specifically those who have the PLUS or proactive land acquisition strategy? Especially those under this PLUS program who get grants under PLUS. And I'm asking that question because all of them do not get ownership of the land. They get 30-year leases, some of them, et cetera, et cetera. So how does that affect the lending to them? And then the development book stands at 5.3 billion in a total book of 44 billion currently. I'd like to know what percentage and rand value of the development 5.3 billion is triple BEE level 4 or better contributors, commercial corporate operations where black ownership is bigger than 50%, and direct loans to historically disadvantaged individuals. Specifically, can you just split up in terms of your explanation of development? What I'm interested in is to get how many loans, direct loans to individual blacks have you done? Other question is, exponential growth of the loan book is normally characterized by a commensurate growth in arrears. What percentage of the development loan book is non-performing? And what is this in rand value so that the members can be able to distinguish between the 5.3 and the actual rand value of your arrears? Then my last question. Your framework of sustainable land reform and agricultural development is still in the conceptual stage, according to your presentation. How do you intend to overcome the major challenge of lack of synergy between major role players in order to realize the 190% growth in transformation over the next 4 years as reflected in your report? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, mine is a clarity second question. On slide 6, where it relates to the historical perspective on the financing activities of the land bank, it has been mentioned that there is no reliable data available in the bank to show clearly how much was dispersed to the emerging sector during period 1996 to 2011. The question is, why is the data that shows how much was dispersed to the emerging sector unreliable? I need a clarity. Maybe if you can explain that in detail so that we can be on the same page. Then the the last one, Chair, is on slide 16, where it speaks to the DAF funding programs and the administration. In all the projects funded, what is the success rate? Also, with regards to the inactive funds, how long was the duration until termination? I submit, Chair.
Honorable Madela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, SDM, and my colleagues, comrades, and everyone else. Chair, I think my question has in part been asked, Chair, but I want to re-put it to for purposes of emphasis, Chair. The land bank and its predecessor in its current form dates back to 1912. It was started specifically to assist white Afrikaner farmers. It has developed and expanded over the years. In, I think, 67, it expanded credit to Indians, a little bit later to coloreds, chain only post 1993 that it expanded to include African clientele, Chair. Now, I'm saying these things, Comrade Moloto, for a specific purpose, that the land bank had a historical and a strategic mission, Chair. We heard the CEO indicated that there's a whole issue about post liberalization, Chair. I'm saying all of this to preface my question. How many of black-owned farmers have been subject to continued dispossession of land through the land bank laying claim to their farms because they defaulted on their repayment agreements, Chairperson. How many of those farms are on the books of the land bank that the land bank is currently putting it up into the open market for anyone else to buy? Because, as I said, this process of land dispossession is actually continuing, if that is indeed the case, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
The last one was Honorable Malwe. The Honorable wants to ask question. You know, I allocate times looking at the number of hands that I receive. When you raise hands after, you disorganize the meeting. Now it's quarter to 11. Or quarter to 10? Quarter to 11, yeah. So, and I'm working with time, so you can only ask one question. Because I've not, yeah. Because you have not raised your hand before. So you can ask that one question. So that's Honorable Madam.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation to our land bank guys. You mentioned the water licenses and the hindrances of water licenses. And I can only imagine that you guys must take water licenses and water allocations on certain properties into account when wanting to assist emerging farmers or farmers in general to make something of land. I mean, if you're going to be purchasing the property, you need to make sure that there's water licenses on there. I wanted to know, do you guys fund and finance the building for internal infrastructure for water holding facilities on the property? And then what communication do you have with the Water Department of Water and Sanitation? Simply because if the Water Department of Water and Sanitation are not handing out certificates to either hold water or hold additional water on properties, I'm sure that could be a hindrance in you being able to assist certain farmers. And in the future, when it comes to emerging farmers, it's going to be an ongoing issue. So what are you doing about what are you doing with that about with the Department of Water and Sanitation, with speeding up the allocation of water licenses? And what percentage in the past has it created a situation where you couldn't purchase a farm or you couldn't fund progress because there wasn't water allocation allowed by the department? Thanks.
Honorable Malue.
No, Chair, I must indicate that it's freezing in here. And there's generally a problem with Parliament. In winter, they turn on the aircon. In summer, it's the heat. I don't know. There's something wrong with people who are controlling this thing. And I must indicate, Chair, that I apologize for arriving late, and I also apologize for leaving early. Because for you to pass legislation, I need to do some work. Now, I only have can the ray...
Chair, there's a post parade going on.
I know that you're missing Maloy. You can see him outside. Please, don't interrupt the mic. Just keep quiet. You have time. You don't have enough time.
Yeah. Now, Chair, you know, I have two questions. The first one, can you just indicate to us as to what is the difference between the land bank and the commercial banks? What can you just indicate that we are different from APSA, which is having a program for farmers and so on and so forth? Why are you different from a commercial bank? Related to that, you know, I think it was in the same room with the land bank, and we had the farmers unions. In that meeting, we had AFASA. And one of the issues which they raised sharply was this issue of collateral or security, which Honorable Stein was talking about earlier on. That your previously disadvantaged people are having difficulties in accessing these loans from the land bank because you would want collateral and so on. Maybe you might have answered it earlier on before I arrived, but if you did not, I would want you to speak to this issue. Because, you know, if you are to increase the ownership of agricultural land and ensuring that we become part of this thing and so on, this collateral is going to close the majority of African farmers outside. Because most of them, they don't have this thing called security and so on. And how do you attend to it? And I wouldn't want to go into details and repeat what was said in that meeting because you were there and so on, but I would want you to respond to it and say, since that meeting to date, what systems have you set in place to attend to the specific problem which is raised by African farmers in particular? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maloy. You know, CEO and Chair, you have a small time to respond to these lot of questions, and I don't know how you're going to work on it. But let me add, because if you respond to these two questions, you might deal with other questions. The question that are you participating in Operation Pakistan? because this thing of finance models and how government and you can partner in coming up with a funding, better funding model for black, for previously disadvantaged farmers has been discussed there. I just want to check whether you participated. What is your view around that? The second question is on the, you have raised it, the insurance scheme, which we've been raising it, but there's no progress. In your own view, where is the bottleneck? Because our view is that agriculture, now for now, for it to be able to to respond as everybody wanted, and I usually give example that every president of since Mandela to Cyril Ramaphosa raised the importance of agriculture. But in terms of funding and making, creating better environment for agriculture to thrive, there is no such. So I just want to look on this insurance scheme, because particularly because of the climate change problems and challenges that were mostly vulnerable as agricultural sector. So where is the bottleneck? The issue that raised by Honorable Paulson on technology is part of the issues of climate change that so where is the bottleneck, and whether as you are conceiving this concept of insurance, have you considered those issues of climate change coming up with those technologies that responds to climate the climate itself. So those are my addition to the questions as asked by members. So you have 10 minutes. Don't know what miracles you're going to do.
It's going to be difficult.
Honorable Chairperson, I'll just answer one question, but before that I would suggest that maybe on some questions that require a lot of detail, we provide that response in writing. Because I don't want the team to end up saying things and later, you said no, but you said the non-performing loans are 7.5, and we found that they're 7.9. Or these are number of women farmers that you gave us, and but the figures do not correlate. I think on those detailed questions, I would suggest that we provide you with comprehensive response. We have been taking copious notes on those questions. Chairperson, but the other matter, before I'm going to hand over to the team, I would want to invite you to come to the Land Bank and have a session with the Land Bank on various issues and go through our service level partners and go into details about our insurance company and start to understand the business in a lot of detail, because sometimes we run through a lot of issues and we end up talking past each other. Just to answer one critical question that was asked by Honorable Van Dalen on the Freedom Farm in Free State and the Guptas, the answer is simply no. We haven't funded any of those. We haven't funded the Gupta family. But I just want to emphasize that the Land Bank has got a policy. You can look for it on our website. You'll find it on political exposed persons. The team does a thorough investigation or due diligence on the submissions that we receive. If there are any politically exposed persons, we as the board would want to know. And whether, because what you want to guard against is undue influence on our credit policy, our credit assessment. So you don't want somebody who's politically powerful like Honorable Van Dalen then starting to make calls to the Land Bank, and then you find that applications that not stack up, that don't make commercial sense, end up being passed. So we are thorough on political exposed persons, and that policy is available on our website. So I'm going to hand over to the team to just answer the questions in principle, and then where detail is required, we'll provide that to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Fine,
Chair. Chair, we'll try. And indeed, thanks to the chairperson for making that request. There's a lot of statistical detail that has been requested, which we don't have here now. And I just wanted to clarify in the case of the first question regarding the utilization of grants, and the question, does it assist with the sustainability of the land bank and so on? Please, the clarification is as follows. Any grant that comes into the land bank, we don't lend it out as loans. I said we either use it as a subsidy for the interest differential. Remember, our cost of interest, the cost of money of the bank is high at the moment, 8.7. So if we were to lend money at, for instance, 6% to a developing farmer, that differential cost would then be carried from this interest subsidy allocation that we get from the lender. So that's how we use it. And I've said in the second instance, the 100 million that is coming through from DAF now, we are not going to use it that way. We are going to use it for what we call blended financing. In other words, where, let's say, somebody requires 10 million rand to develop their farm, but based on our sustainability financial calculations, we say no, this farm can only afford 7 million rand. Then we would take 3 million from that and use it as that particular emerging farmer's equity contribution into the project. So that's how we use aging farmers and young people and so on. Again, I know that we have funded some projects, some transactions with young people. We don't have the statistics. But there is a specialized program on youth and women. I know, Honorable Member, you mentioned people with disabilities, which we have just conceptualized. It's a focused program. We have created a specialized team, but we only started doing this about 2 months ago, where we are going after opportunities, finding land parcels, inviting young people to come through, combining that with technical support and advice, and arranging money and so on. So we have a specialized youth and women program. The results of it are not yet showing now because it's in the early phases. But regarding what statistics are there in the portfolio, let us come back with that as part of the report back. With the Department of Land Reform, Honorable Member, really our interface is primarily around land because they are a big buyer and acquirer of land. And the proposition that we are discussing with them, and unfortunately it has not really found fruition, is simply that those land parcels that are in the hands of land reform, could they be made available to emerging farmers in our preference on a free title ownership basis so that we could then work with the black emerging farmers to commercialize those? And to, because commercialization means going back, evaluating the status of the farm, determining what is the best possible use of the farm, determining how much capital is required to clean up the farm if it has overgrown, foreign or alien species on the land and so on, and reestablishing it, as they say, in agricultural terms. So our interface is there. And again, I don't know if my colleagues from the land reform are in here. There was a proposal that we made in 2016, late or early 2017, where we had said maybe we could pilot a program where out of the number that has been mentioned, a couple of thousand, maybe they give us, say, in each province, something in the order of about 50 units or so, and then we could run pilots of commercializing this kind of things. But, you know, government, you are the supervisors of government. Things take long to come to fruition and so on and so on. But we are always hopeful that things will come in. The co-ops that I was referring to, sir, are the well-established ones, if you like, the old ones that have been in existence for many, many, many years. We haven't done a lot of work in the, if you like, emerging co-ops. We have funded a couple, and again, I would like to come back with the statistics. One of the, that particular one that I talked about in the KZN area, it's actually a co-op structure. There's a co-op structure in the Free States that we have done around livestock. So there are a few of them. I would like to come back with details on that and where they stand, how much we have done, what are the beneficiary profiles, and so on and so on. What do we need in order for the land bank to succeed? You know, this question, I can talk for the next hour, but I'll be specific. For this organization to really be impactful, the capital of this bank in terms of balance sheet capital needs to be enhanced, because it is the layer of capital in the balance sheet of a bank that enhances risk-bearing capacity. You can take more risk if you have a layer of adequate capital in the bank. And again, we all know the constraints that the Treasury is facing. But the last time that this bank received capitalization was somewhere in 2008-2009, when it was being saved from near bankruptcy. Members will remember that. And my predecessor, colleague, Phakamani Hadebe, was then commissioned to rescue the place, and at that point there was capitalization. From there on, we are funded exclusively out of capital markets as well as this international finance institution. It's a fact, members, any bank, whether private or state-owned, requires periodic capital enhancement. The second issue that I believe that this particular institution requires is that the client base of developing farmers require equity support. There are just too many transactions that we are not able to close because somebody requires 25 million. We do our viability calculations and we determine that no, we can't finance 25 million, we can only finance 20 million. The black person has to have an equity from their side in order to provide the total funding package, and they don't have. And it is our proposition, Chair, that some of the grants in the government system, either at DAF or DLR, land reform, could be repurposed to close that particular gap. And by the way, in terms of this blended financing thoughts, which I will talk about earlier, that is precisely what we are trying to do. There's one example that I must touch on quickly, Chair, if you allow me. Here in the Western Cape, working with the Horticulture Industry Organization, there's a very interesting initiative that we are in the process of finalizing, literally finalizing, because we got approval from our board just last week. They allocated 100 million rand from their industry budget. They obtained 200 million rand from the jobs fund, and the land bank has approved 300 million, and we have created a total fund of 600 million rand specifically to promote black emerging farmers in the horticulture industry. The money from the industry and from the jobs fund represents this equity support side, and our money represents the debt support side. So the projects that we are going to be doing on the ground are, from a financial structure point of view, will have a combination of debt money but also equity support money in order to reduce the risk of default. We are in the final stages. It's one of the most brilliant things that, in my view, has happened in recent times in the land bank. And we foresee that very easily being replicated in the various other industry sectors. Underutilized farms, I think I've already commented. We haven't costed the recapitalization thereof. We haven't done so. But we had asked DLR whether we could take some together with them into a partnership. In a partnership format. Agri SA I don't know if I'm able to talk about their spending. How much have we assisted? We've already indicated that 5.3 billion or so already invested in black farmers, but what has been asked of us is to break it down into detail. And so let's do that. The drought scheme, the 400 million, I think, was fully utilized, was it? Yeah, it was fully utilized, the 400 million drought scheme. The details of the status of the individual farms now, whether they are still in sustenance or going down or what, we can provide further details. It's very easy to pull that information out. Technology, yes, we agree, but at this particular point in time, we are not investing in new technologies as an organization. Not because we don't want to, but what we are doing is there are various technology organizations out there that we have collaborated in running some pilots. For instance, we went to our client base and using, of course, the common one these days is drones or specialized irrigation and so on. So we are running in partnership with private sector some pilots with our clients, but we are not necessarily investing. We don't have a portfolio yet on urban farming. It is a very interesting space that we are looking at, but we don't have a portfolio yet. But we do have a pipeline of transactions that are on the table that we are evaluating. You know, people planting on vertical farming inside closed buildings and so on and so on. But we haven't financed those yet. We can come back regarding the details around legal actions and so on, but as the member rightly observes, it is important that the land bank should, in the first instance, try and structure the loan or the financing at the beginning in such a way that we reduce the risk of default. That is why when we do the calculations and we say we are looking at 20 million requirement, if our affordability calculations indicate that the affordability level is 15 million, not 20 million, it means the counterparty, the farmer, must provide the balance. If they don't have it, Chairperson, in all honesty, we would rather not approve the 20 million transactions because we know we are setting them up for default if we do that. So it is the kind of responsible lending and financing that is required of us as the directors of the bank. So I can come back with regards to the details of any litigations that are going on, but the general default position of the bank, and we can demonstrate this, is not to liquidate at first sight. It is to find solutions, try and restructure the loan, see if we can provide additional working capital, see if we can find a partner to maybe help resuscitate the entity and so on and so on and so on. But yes, it does happen that eventually perhaps a particular situation cannot be saved and it has to go for litigation and so on. Changing the banking profile, we need to close? It's quite a lot. It's a lot. Maybe the statistics around women, the percentages, jobs created, really I don't have them now. I would have to come back. But traditional areas, we do perform feasibility assessment before we invest. So the areas where we have done projects are areas that have access to water, where the soil conditions are appropriate for whatever commodity that is being farmed there. So every project that we have done is preceded by a feasibility assessment to determine suitability, including adequacy of infrastructure and soil conditions. Mr. Mulodu has dealt with the issue of the politics and the Guptas and the governance, MPT, DAF, and so on. I think we have tried.
Let me thank you. I think, you know, Chairperson, because on the other side, he is the advisor of the authority here. He must arrange this thing of the little time that committee has. We are not getting information because of the time limit of parliament that the committees have. So please just advise
better. But what I want to indicate, CEO and Chair, because it's very much important information that you have you're supposed to share, even if you've not responded to all the questions, we would actually create another time that we continue to engage. I've raised the issue of Operation Pakisa because there is a working committee that deals with finances, which I think most of the questions reside in those issues because there is a solution that has been outlined there. But it's important that when we call the deputy president on the Operation Pakisa, will extend invitation with yourself, Lenberg, so that this interaction can be coherently coordinated, because one of the things that kills government is lack of coordination of the institutions. You know, you have IDCs doing agricultural projects, funding provinces, which is not coordinated with anybody. So if this money is pulled together, can make impact in what we've been raising. So we'll continue to engage with yourself, and we'll create time for you. And I know that even last time we had this thing, and we want to apologize for that. So if you can then submit that to our secretary, we'll then distribute to members. Thank you, Chief. Time frame on the report. When can we get the report? Because in 7 days. No. 7 days?
2 weeks.
Okay. 14 days. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Sabak, you're welcome. Can I send the... Sabak, you're welcome. You want to speak before they go out? Chair of the board, sorry. Quickly. Can you come back and the CEO, the deputy minister want to say something before you go out?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In the meantime, we'll be connecting for service. I'm sorry, deputy minister, I didn't see your hand. Okay. The deputy minister?
Thank you, Chair. The honourable member on the other side is raising an issue, Chair, that Land Bank comes with a boys choir, so I'm sure you need to attend to that. But what I wanted to say, Chair, is that one having interacted with the bank, there's definitely a balancing act, which it's a continuous challenge of the strict financing criteria. And on the other hand, being more liberal and setting up emerging farmers for failure. So it's a balancing act, which is a moving target, which they should continuously look at. But there's a point that we have raised. We have raised the question of funding. But one of the things that we have looked at, there are a lot of grants lying around in government, not necessarily in DAF, but in government in general, which has something to do with agriculture. So we have started a process where we are trying to get hold of all those grants because they are very important in terms of de-risking the projects and funding. Talking to what Land Bank was saying, the question of blended finance, it's a way of de-risking some of these projects so that you are able to deal with the equity and other things that the emerging farmers can't provide. But I would like to stress the part where I think the committee needs more time with the Land Bank. There is an invitation which has been extended to the committee, and it would be good if the committee were to take up that invitation. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We do need them. It's just say authority. We know the time that we're given as committees are very little. Thank you, Chair, and indeed we will interact with yourself.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Welcome, sir.
Members and other attendees, and we thank you for inviting us as Veterinary Council to talk to you today. I'd first like to just apologize for our president, who isn't here today, but unfortunately he's at the World Veterinary Association meeting in Barcelona. I'm going to go through the power presentation on strategic planning. I think what I'm going to do is I won't delay or stay too long on some of the slides, so it gives you a bit more opportunity for questions and also lets the committee catch up on their task at hand. So this is a strategic planning that we're talking about between 2017 going through to 2019. On the second page, I think those are all self-explanatory, the abbreviations that we'll be using. The one that just needs to maybe be explained a bit is veterinary professional life, and that we'll come to later. And that just is the attending to the professionals who are vets and their life once they've qualified, but that we'll get to a bit later. The vision, we've done this before, is advancing public and animal health through quality veterinary services for all. And then we've got a number of strategic goals. I'm going to go through them one by one, and hopefully it will address your questions about where we're going as council. So the first thing is we want to drive transformation of the veterinary profession to address the needs of the people of South Africa more effectively and inclusively. And we do realize as the profession how important our profession is to the country in terms of food safety and security, animal welfare, and even the human welfare in terms of the pets that we treat. Starting off with basic education, we've looked at the various reasons how we can get more people coming into the veterinary business. We've looked at how we can improve the transformation. And a lot of that is to do with the basic education. To access, evaluate relevant research and data, we do lobby the ministers, and we must say we've had a very, very good relationship with the ministers in Ngwazi, and I thank him for that. And we would also have to look at having build up a relationship with the Ministry of Basic and Higher Education, so that we can talk these things through. So the council sees as part of its whole job is to look at developing educational material for children. So one of our biggest problems in recruiting people to the veterinary profession, and when I say veterinary profession, that includes the animal health technicians, the veterinary nurses, and the veterinarians themselves, is that we have to get more education out there for the very young children about what this profession is. It hasn't been a traditional profession for everyone in the country, and that's what we've got to change. We've got to have, I think it's an excellent idea, and we've got to implement it throughout the country. We've got to have school farming projects where we introduce children at a young age to farming and the new types of farming that successful.
higher education, that's the one step up. once again, transformation at student level, I think that's going very well. We must discuss further, develop further discussions with students about this, and we've got to look at our process of recurriculation. And we're already doing that as university plus council to work out what are the most suitable day one skills for veterinarians that qualify, that make them not underqualified, but also able to do the work. The One Health concept, I think I've addressed before, the One Health concept is really meaning that environment, human health, and animal health cannot be separated. It's all one. And a perfect example was this listeriosis outbreak. It's a combined effort. It's not isolated in little pockets. the role of the veterinary team in higher education, cross-functional training, what we mean by that is that we've got to train people across the spectrum of animal health technicians, which form a very important part of the veterinary team, the veterinary nurses and the veterinarians to form as one team. Veterinary professional life education, I've addressed that. The wellness focus that we've also got to look at. Unfortunately, our profession, and it's a very sad statistic, is one of the highest incidents of suicide amongst young professionals. And we as a council feel we need to help address this and find out the reason why. And then the council involvement on advisory boards. We sit with a lot of the advisory boards where it is to do with the veterinary science. The higher education training in the SODIC region, there's a lot of cross-pollination with other universities, especially in Africa and the southern part of Africa, that train veterinarians. Unfortunately, in my opinion, and that's just my opinion, there is quite a variance in the standards between the faculties, and there is definitely a move afoot to try and standardize this. We've already seen that Botswana is now opening a veterinary faculty, and you know, there's been a lot of input from South Africa in that case. The training institutions are to conduct climate surveys. That's self-explanatory. The veterinary professions and the team, the liaison with the minister, that's DAF. And once again, I'll just reiterate that I think there's very good liaison at the moment. collaboration with the Animal Health Forum. For those of you who are not quite au fait with the term Animal Health Forum, there's a forum of all the different parts of animal health. The Red Meat Producers Organization, the emerging farmers and everything that comes together under the umbrella of the Animal Health Forum. And we also remember that. We actually give them financial support so that we try and coordinate this whole thing of animal health in this country, because it doesn't help that one does this and the other one does that. We have a very good relationship with DAF, as I said. We have the implementation of the private-public partnership is very important, and that we've seen a lot of already, where there's synergy between the state and the government institutions in terms of veterinary work. And then educating the profession about this, and that's ongoing. How do we do this? We've had workshops, and we have ongoing workshops with all members, all professions within the council, as to how we do that. The veterinary professions team, one of our biggest things is to alleviate unemployment. Unfortunately, there's a situation now where, for example, animal health technicians, there are many, many animal health technicians that are unemployed. And that's one of the big focuses of DAF and the council and everyone concerned, that we find employment for these people. But they've got, the animal health technicians have got to be employable, so they've got to be trained well enough in what they do. There's a new inspectorate versus laypersons. One of the big problems we find in the profession is that there are laypersons out there who try and come in and do veterinary work, and that does cause a problem. And we've now established an inspectorate that actually looks at that. The Animal Welfare Forum is very important. It's becoming more and more important internationally. So if you want to export meat, if you want to do anything in terms of international trade, you've got to have your animal welfare in place. All your looking after your cows and that sort of thing, because it becomes very important when we're exporting. Technological advances, I think luckily the veterinary profession is very far advanced in its technological advances, but unfortunately one of the biggest problems to me in this country is that there is a dearth of research, and we all know how much research costs, so we must use international research to help us advance our technologies in the country. And that is non-governmental and intergovernmental will help us do this. Regulating the veterinary profession, that's what we do. Everyone thinks that's the main function of council, but it's not. It's only a small part, but it is an important part. So that is just to see that the regulations and rules are followed and action is taken where they aren't. Right, we've got to drive an effective communication plan with all the stakeholders. That's one of our main goals to do, and I'm going to go through this briefly. But we've got a general communication strategy that works with all the stakeholders, as I've mentioned before. I'm going to go through this quickly. And just to give it a little bit more detail, we're going to have a general communication strategy in terms of upstream, lateral, and downstream. And all that really means is the upstream is having communications with government and parliament and everyone else here. The lateral is on the veterinary level, and then downstream is right down to the public and the schools, etc. So we've got there the upstream, and we have a lot of communication with the registrar and manager of Acts, including Act 36 and the Medicine Control Council, which is now SAHPRA. I think that's the right pronunciation, that we have continuous discussions about this. About things like antimicrobials, where there is major international emphasis at the moment on antimicrobials. And in my mind, we mustn't be with the game, we must be ahead of the game for the whole of Africa. The importance of specific issues, and then we've got to look at faster rollout of veterinary strategy. I think that's a little bit optimistic, but that's fine to put it there. The lateral, I'm not going to go into the details of those. That's just the communications to across the profession. I must say in the council as such, we have very, very good communications with our members, whereas it used to be them and us. In the past with the council, it's more a case of all us now. And we do that through a lot more communication with our members, etc., etc. That I'm also going to glance over. Downstream is very important, building relationship with end users. So there's got to be good relations. Once again, the public and especially the farmers out there mustn't see the vets as anything but an important part of their team. And that's what our ultimate goal is. And that's with the state vets, with the private vets, etc. Downstream, we've spoken about the media and that. And then the third strategic goal is very important. It's one that's very close to my heart because I'm very much involved in that, is looking at the restructuring of the council. I think the council has worked effectively, but it's been going on for the last 15, 20 years in the same mold. And what we've done is we've got an ad hoc committee that's looking at the structure of council and how we can improve that. Just for example, council is elected every 3 years with members for 3 years in mass. And that causes a lot of discontinuity, whereas we're saying, hey, we should be elected on a two-year basis, electing new people all the time. But that we'll have to discuss with the Department of Agriculture and the government, because we are a statutory body, and it is enacted how we are structured. As far as the council goes itself, we are also looking at the actual council with its admin. I think it's working very well. We have got very good transformation in the council. The only thing is there's only one male amongst 20 females, so I think that's a little bit... Yeah. But it's a very... very transformed in terms of the gender and culture and everything else. Once again, the restructuring, we're going through everything from the way it's elected right through to how the people are selected to serve on council. The legal department has got to review the act. Unfortunate part about it is when we look at reviewing the act and that, it takes a long time to change the act. And you folk will know far more than me about how and why it takes so long, but it does take long. We must review the mandate of the council, representation on council, and develop a transformation policy. I think our transformation policy has worked very well in the past. Our biggest problem is that we often have very brilliant, our one president was sent off to Belgium to be head of agriculture attaché. Our other vice president has just resigned because she's become head of Poultry South Africa. So it's not that we don't try, but there's so much demand for these people with expertise in the country. That's one. I'm also not going to go through the detail. And I think that's about all. Just want to thank you all for listening and giving us time. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable members, that was the presentation from SAVEC. Can we ask questions, not speeches, honorable members? Ask questions, no remarks, because we don't have much time. We'll end up having the situation of land bank releasing them without responding to your question, because you eat a lot of time. We have only 15 minutes to deal with that. Honorable Chew, Honorable Stain, Honorable Sapa, Honorable Mapanga. In that order, three questions per member if you have.
Okay. Pardon my ignorance on the veterinary service thing, but on this one, on the spread plan, it's only about communication. But I don't understand, because my question is based on the animals that are in peri-urban areas that are eating the filth all over. And so it means that those farmers that own those particular cattle, they are not in good condition for consumption. By the mere fact that we don't even see cattle being taken to a dip in those areas. So I don't know what is happening about animals that are roaming everywhere. So I thought the presentation was going to talk about that. In which areas there are problem areas, and how do we help our communities to address those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable State.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I wanted to find out about this thing of the animal health technicians that's unemployed. Do you maybe have an idea of how many they are and where they are situated? Because I can't imagine that in a country where we're sitting with so many problems dealing with animal health, that we are sitting with these technicians unemployed. And then maybe linked to that, is there something or somebody or some that regulates, like you do with the students, with the veterinarians? How many people can get trained per year? Are we not oversupplying then if we can't get them employment that is linked to that? The other one that I wanted to find out, I'm being informed that state veterinarians have a problem with transport in the sense that they don't get enough funding to go out and do their work. Do you get any complaints or anything dealing with that? Are you aware of anything? And then Act 36, the microbials. Do you still experience problems with the use of medicines and other things that is not registered via Act 36? Because, Deputy Minister, I still hear there's problems in that department where people wait years and years and years to get something registered because there's just not capacity to get through it, and so people are then using unregistered documents. And then the last one, I am concerned about the diseases It seems like there are still massive outbreaks of brucellosis and other things. Is it possible, maybe, Chair, that we get a list of the current animal diseases that's in the country, and do you think we can get it under control, if I can almost use the better use of a word, because I'm extremely concerned, especially those diseases that can affect people, that we are not having it under control.
Thank you, Chair. Only two. One on slide 9, 1C. There are several issues mentioned there, but there is that one where you say approach DAF. I'm interested in what exactly area DAF is going to be approached here. Lastly, on slide 27, you talk of developing a transformation policy. Does this mean that there has been a policy, there has been no policy, or does it mean that maybe a policy will be reviewed? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think one should actually add on the question that raised by Honorable State. Instead of giving us the list as we have requested from DAF, we need a strategy from the department, the strategy in responding to the outbreaks, diseases, and all those things. As part of the strategy that government has signed that they are going to contribute in climate change and in our sector, that department must develop that strategy. I think we should say that we need that strategy, which will indicate, and there should be briefing every now and then with the disease, the new diseases, how they have been managed, and how do we educate our people in that strategy, mitigation and adaptation of how should people behave, like issues that is raised by Honorable Chew, is very much important. You have all, you go in township everywhere, all our cattle, our sheep, hog, box, what do you call it, is it box? Yeah, goats. Yeah, goats. They go everywhere in the street, they eat plastic, they eat all these sort of things. And there's no actual, in the environment where you have human beings says our life is threatened, because we must build this, our understanding the relationship of ourselves as human beings to that of animals. If the climate is affecting us, what about animals? And what strategy are we putting in place to deal with those? And even the change of the behavior of human beings around issues of animals. I think that's the strategy that we need. Honorable Sen, you wanted?
Yeah, Chair, I think it's maybe important that we also get a presentation or a meeting one day with the Animal Health Forum, because they are dealing with most of these issues, and they are also the link, as I understand it, with the department. I'm not sure if I'm wrong. But they are the people trying to get all these things together, and maybe they can assist us with that.
Yeah, but we might not have enough of that time for the department, because they are coming here on quarterly basis. We should then be able to get that briefing from them. And if they are not meeting those people frequently, that there are masot, we should then have that meeting frequently with them. Honorable Mwabe, before they respond.
It's just a short clarity, Chairperson, from the presenter. Is the University of Pretoria the only institution in the country that offers this kind of education? That maybe if you can clarify lastly to me your paragraph page 3, where you speak of Prof. Holm requested to meet with the African Fellows student group. I just want to understand that kind under the your strategic goals identified and proposed implementation. But on page 3, seemingly there are some complaints from students.
Sorry, is that page 3?
Yes, on top of that. Where you says Prof. Horn requested to meet with African fellows, a student group recognized by the University of Pretoria. I just want to understand that student group called the African Fellows, what's happening under your strategic implementation? And what are those complaints all about that needs that particular group to be addressed, African Fellows? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, you can respond, sir.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'll just go through the questions bit by bit. The first one on the peri-urban animals, I think that's a very important point that was raised by one of the honourable members, and I think it's something that needs to be done, but it cannot be done with a single factor. There's a whole number of people that must work together on these things. I'm from the Cape, and I know it's one of our biggest problems in Khayelitsha, for example, that the animals roam freely. A lot of them are, you know, malnourished because they don't eat, they didn't get the proper food, etc., etc. And the only way that can be done, in my mind, and remember, I'm with the council, but it's my personal opinion, and I think it's something that's part of this whole issue of animal welfare, is that the local authorities must take action and see that there's nothing wrong with having the animals in the peri-urban areas, but then it's got to be controlled to some degree. At the moment, it's just willy-nilly. The animals roam all over. They roam on the N2 and eat plastic and all that sort of thing. And so it's a multiple. It's animal welfare. It's the suffering. It's a health issue because they often go and graze where, you know, there's effluent and that sort of thing. So it's a very important issue, but it needs to be addressed by a number of departments, in my opinion. I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
Your profession is to look after animals.
Yeah, yeah.
And to ensure that they eat properly and all that.
Yeah.
That particular role.
Yeah.
What is your role there?
No,
then after you have done your part, then you can explain who has to do the other part, your part.
Yeah, I think the way one's got to look at it is the profession is divided into people in the profession work in different departments, either private or they work for government or everything like that. But that, for example, would be an excellent opportunity to use animal health technicians. So you could use animal health technicians in the urban and peri-urban areas because you've got to have someone to go out there and control this and say, those animals, who owns them, they're malnourished, you've got to feed them, etc. And a lot of it is through education. I don't think it's willful neglect often. It's more to do with education and teaching the people. But someone's got to do that. And, you know, there aren't enough veterinarians to do that. We'll come to that later question. But there aren't enough veterinarians to do that, but there are enough para-veterinarians in terms of animal health technicians. So it's maybe something council and DAFMAT look at as an opportunity to use these animal health technicians. But it costs money. Someone's got to pay for that. Does that answer your question?
Can we proceed because we don't have time?
Yeah.
We must close.
The next one is on the number of AHT unemployed and their training. Once again, that figure, can I have that sent to you? Because I haven't got it off the top of my head. I just know that they keep on telling us how many AHTs are unemployed. And there are two reasons. Unemployed maybe because three reasons. There are too many being trained, I doubt it. Unemployed because their training could be more appropriate for what they should be doing. They should be better trained, and you've got to make them employable. That's very important, and I don't think that's entirely been done at the moment. So then your next one was the state veterinarians with the transport.
I think that's an ongoing, but it's very local. So in other words, in certain provinces, it isn't a problem. In other provinces, it is a major problem. So once again, it's more local thing than a national problem. I've heard that it's still a big problem in the Free State and in the Northwest Province. I don't think it's such a problem in the Western Cape, but DAF would be able to answer us that. But a lot of that is because of this diversification down to provincial level. The Act 36 and Act 101, the antimicrobials, and this is very early days, but we're hoping to take all antimicrobials out of Act 36 and put them under 101 so that they can be controlled. Because at the moment there is the OIE, which is the international, we all know what the OIE is demanding, that it's put under a central act and that there's better control over that. So all antimicrobials should be under veterinary control. Your point, and the Madam Chair also alluded to that, on the diseases, I think you are both very, very correct. Maybe with council and with DAF, we should look at doing more work on putting stuff out there about communicating which are the major diseases and how major they are. They are. Brucellosis is a very good point, causes a lot of problems in the animal and in the human, and we should be telling the public out there and the government how bad this is and what needs to be done. And that goes for all the diseases that are. There are already scheduled diseases that the government, the moment you get a case of that disease, you have to report it to the local state vet, and that we do. And the government works, DAF works very well with us on that. But I think it's a very good idea that we have a better plan in terms of disease in the country. Once again, if I can quickly say that, it's also a local problem. So in the Western Cape, it's very well done. There's very epidemiology tests and everything throughout the with certain other provinces. I don't think there is that data available. The next point I've got here is approaching DAF. What, I can't quite remember that. That was us, how we approach DAF and the association we have with DAF. I think that, you know, we do have a major liaison with DAF. We have a number of meetings with them. We have regular meetings with Dr. Morisani and Dr. Maya. There's constant meetings between us and DAF. I think they're very good. But I can hear their frustrations too. I think they do deal with frustrations. As far as the transformation goes, the transformation I think is well on its way to being where it should be. And it isn't a case of the transformation that just started. It's been going on for a long, long time. And then the final question I got was on the University of Pretoria. a very good point. In my personal opinion, and I'll probably be shot down for this, I think there aren't enough vets qualifying in this country. And there should be more veterinarians qualifying. I hear there are rumors of a possible faculty at Fort Eyre, which is fine. I think it's a good idea that if there's another faculty, it shouldn't be in the Gauteng region because the disease profile is different. So it should be in the Eastern Cape or Natal or something like that. But in my opinion, there is a shortage of veterinarians. Well, I know there is. There's a major shortage of veterinarians. We as a practice have been looking for a person to do dairy veterinary work for us for 1.5 years, and we can't find them. So there is a major shortage of vets in the country, and that extends to veterinary nurses as well. The only profession that there isn't a problem with is animal health technician. So I think it's something that needs to be addressed. But I know there are major costs in establishing such a faculty, and that is something for the higher education to look at. This is a very good point. And then I think the last issue was about students. I think the student issue, in my opinion, has was blown a little bit out of proportion. It's, you know, the students, it's a very difficult course, and I think where the problem does arise is that people that come from an education system where there was let's put it this way, maybe lack in certain parts of their education. They find it more difficult once they get to university to do the veterinary degree. So that's very important to have that bridging and to have that mentoring of those people that they can do the course and pass the course. I think that's all. I rushed that, but...
A follow-up, Chair.
Okay, so, sorry, can I have just more specific on the African students? What was the question?
Okay. Repeat it.
My question, Chairperson, was that why in that institution you have that category of the group of students referred to as African fellows that Prof. Dom was supposed to meet? That's my question. I need more clarity regarding that.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they clarified as African students? Yeah, I don't even know that. If it's true, I mean, it's probably not acceptable. What? Oh, I see. Okay, let me just go to that quickly. Let me go to that quickly. That is on? Madam Chair, that comes from the faculty. I'll have to come back to them, and I agree with you that the incorrect terminology. So I don't know what happened there. These were their answers of the strategies they'd done. But if you leave that with me, I'll take it up with them definitely and change that. Is that acceptable? They might have seen it in, you know, African fellows. I haven't a clue quite what they meant there, but I'll have to find that out for you.
Yeah, Chair, I want to raise the issue of the veterinary services being, the subject being difficult. There's nothing difficult about it because African doctors have passed before in Medunsa. There was a veterinary services in Medunsa. And it was stopped for what reasons, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but it was stopped. But there was a veterinary services in Medunsa. Mm. And there's nothing wrong about African people looking after animals. We have looked after animals for centuries, before we even had formal schooling. So there's nothing difficult about the subject. And I don't think anatomy can be difficult to any student that is African. Any African student can do at anatomy. So there's nothing like that subject is difficult. We know how lecturers stop students from passing. Even previously, we know how the Bruder Bond used to stop African students from passing. So there's nothing difficult about it.
Not go to that level. Agree that we have a department has a program called revolutionization of veterinary service, which includes the strategy how we're going to get youth or previously disadvantaged groups into the system and make sure that we deploy already deployed mobile clinics in villages. The issue is, in terms of the strategy, we should have the time frame of if 2018 you have 100 vets and now you have various challenges of diseases that we are confronted with, caused by the environment, or climate changes. So what government should do to double its efforts to create more vets in the country. And you are right to say that we need to interact with higher education to make sure that there is more faculty. If in Medunsa there was, the faculty must be open, must get the reason why it has been closed and why we don't have all those institutions. Actually, it must be in various areas of the country. You know, we fought last time on the bed allocation where we asking why, if you are doing these things for the previously excluded areas, but your distribution is still going to the area where there is a need. And the reason was that is because we are following the clinics where they are. You cannot put beds outside or the user. So means the strategy as presented by department, it's looking at all those issues, including the clinics themselves, where this vet must work on. The pertinent questions that we have to get from yourself and department, which has not been responded, their work as a profession, which has been provincialized and get frustrated at provincial level, and then the creation of norms and standards, if you remember in the last previous meeting, how far are we with those issues? Because those are pendent issues. You know, we need to attend to this thing. We should not actually wait to have the same problem that health is having today of the health inspectors being transferred to local municipalities. Now they don't have capacity and they are not responding. They are not actually capacitated to do their work at that level because they've been removed from their profession to municipalities. So I think even this thing of this, we should actually attend it to it. Maybe it's just to get clarity. Have we resolved that issue or is still pending on VET being provincialized, reporting to provinces, no national standards and for all the VETs in the country? Acting DG?
The DG is back in the department, Chair. Chair, as the yes, Chair, the issue remains unresolved. It's a constitutional issue. What we tried to do was then to have agreements, service agreements with the vets, who then have got those service agreements with the director of animal health, who's responsible for the Animal Diseases Act. So that's the only coordination, but the issue around how we can almost have a seamless vet services in South Africa remains unresolved because of constitutional issues, the mandate, agriculture being a dual mandate between provinces and national. Thank you, Chair.
That's what you were saying, Acting DG until Mlengani comes. We should use the opportunity. You know, one thing that is weakness of government, we don't learn from our mistakes. We should use the mistakes of health to see how we resolve all these challenges that we are facing in other sectors. If now we are stuck in health, you have this problem of inspectors who have been misplaced because of In the context of those that they are drafting the constitution, that you needed that service in the local municipalities and therefore municipality will be the relevant authority to look after those people. But practically, it says that you have detached them from their professionals and therefore there is no monitoring. Those municipalities, they are not qualified health professionals. They cannot actually monitor those health practitioners. So even with this thing of VET, we have to look at how we nationalize it such that it become a profession like any other thing. Teachers, they are profession. Even if there is a teacher being paid at the provincial level, but the norms and standards are the same. But why with VET is not the same? Is it the constitution or is us who has actually read this document, vice versa? I think that's one of the things that we have to unpack at DG. Whether is it us, because there are those that say, you know, when we read this document, every now and then we would have these Samaritans who have been keeping quiet and say, but they've not used this clause man and clause number Maliban of this act, which actually can allow you to implement such things. So we have to unpack all those issues and make sure that veterinary services get necessary support and capacitated, because they are more important. They are equal important to the health professions of the human beings. If we can have this notion that you cannot separate animals from ourselves, then we'll then correctly apply and put system, better system to manage both human beings and animals together such that they don't actually transfer diseases from one another, because it's going to be very dangerous to the system themselves. So thank you very much, sir. Your last word. As we get Mpumalanga to connect, you can just shift quick and just you can, your last word, the mic, you can go to the next chair and Alberti, you can sit there and Mpumalanga will connect to them. I said your last
word. Yeah, I'd just like to emphasize, and I think I'm not going to say much, but all I'm going to say is that there's one health, exactly what you've just said in the last statement, the one health that is the human, the animal, and the environment taken together. And as that previous member said about the plastic and all that sort of thing, that's to do with the environment. But, you know, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's exactly spot on what we should be doing. Thank you.
Amukela batho ba Mpumalanga. And we must introduce yourself to who you are and where is your MPC back there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, our Deputy Minister, colleagues, I'm here with the team from the department. On my left-hand side, I've got Dr. Dagada, who's the Chief Director for Farmer Support and Development. Next to him, I have the CFO, Mr. Mapoloba Letswalo. The MEC has tendered his apology. They are having the sitting of the legislature, and he's the leader of government business. That's why he couldn't be with us today. Thank you very much, Chair. This is a presentation from Mpumalanga Province. My name is Cindy Kula. I'm the HOD for the department. Chair, in terms of the presentation, I'm just going to talk to a few issues. I think we have the presentation outlined there. Just to give a bit of a profile of the department, because this is where we start our planning of the province as a whole. And looking at the highlights, specifically focusing on Fitzatala in terms of what we have achieved as the department, and then I will go to the detailed report where I will talk to the issues around the budget, around the projects that we have implemented in Ilima Litsima, around this Masbueles Bayeni, which is the animal production project, and around what we call Fortune 40, which is the Young Farmers Incubator Program. Then from there, all the presentations that will follow are more the detailed information on the issues and the implementation of the province. We have attached the acronyms because we've used quite a lot of them, just to make it ease of reference for the honorable members. But quickly, if I can just move to the profile of the province. In summary, Chair, I won't read through the slides, but in summary, I think what I would want to highlight are the different quarters in terms of what we have done as a province. These are the sources that are coming from the Stats SA. We actually want to indicate that Mpumalanga really relies on agriculture as one of its core areas that actually create employment. We are saying that if you look at the three quarters between 2016 to 2017, we have moved to actually utilize agriculture more than even the national norms. For example, in quarter three in 2016, for the province it was 8.5%, which was an increase from 5.6. Quarter two in 2017, 5.2% for the country and 7.9% for Mpumalanga. And then lastly, on quarter three 2017, 8.3%, which has a move from 5%. So we are saying that here we are talking about the private households, the informal sector, that registered the largest share in terms of the total employment in the third quarter, which is in 2017 for the province. We are, however, indicating that there is a decrease in terms of agricultural share, especially in private household share, which on the other side has increased to 8.3%. In terms of the numbers, we're saying 99,624 persons employed in Mpumalanga are within the agricultural industry. As I've indicated before, that it's a very rural province, therefore we depend a lot on agriculture. Chair, I'm not going to talk to that slide. It's just an indication pictorially in a graph in terms of the different sectors that we have in Mpumalanga. But just to indicate that the first three are the ones that create employment. One is agriculture, two is mining, then manufacturing, and then we have the others that are there. But interestingly enough, on trade and community services, it's also one of the contributing sectors in terms of employment in the province. The next slide, which is slide number 7, talks to the industry contribution to the national industry. If I can just zoom to the one written in green, we are saying that it is estimated that in 2015, the province was a sustainable role player in the national mining utilities, especially around the issues of electricity, as you know that we have a lot of mines. But we are also indicating that in terms of agricultural industries, the respective shares of 21.5%, 15.3%, and lastly, in the last quarter, it was 9.2%. It is noticeable that the contribution by agriculture has increased between the years 1995 right up to 2015. Now, these statistics are the ones that are assisting the province when we plan, because we know that we have to focus mainly on agriculture because it is one of the key areas in the province. In terms of the highlights of the achievement, we have focused on the Fitzatala targets, which we have put in place for the financial year 2017-18. We have listed the key targets there. If I can quickly summarize them. The first target here, which is the increase in economic participation, we have as a province an agricultural young farmer incubator program, which we call Fortune 40. This is one program that has done very well in terms of ensuring that the youth are encouraged to participate in agriculture. This is where we have identified government farms that were lying fallow, which have not been utilized before, and we recruited youth that are unemployed in the different villages and put them in this program. Our first initial program included about 12 farms which are currently in production. Number two is the offtake agreement. Very, very important for farmers, because if you don't have any offtake agreement, where are they going to sell their produce? We have therefore, together with our cabinet, established the government nutrition program. The Department of Education, in terms of supply of vegetables, they are buying directly from our farmers. That was adopted by cabinet, and the service providers that they were utilizing before were therefore stopped, and they are buying now directly from the local farmers. From the department side, it meant that we needed to prepare our farmers so that the produce that they produce are up to the correct standard and can be able to supply schools. We have now moved, we have included the Department of Health. We are now supplying a few hospitals as a startup. The stringent criteria for hospitals is enforcing us to ensure that our farmers are also rising to the occasion. Number three, improvement on agro-processing value chain. We are saying that we are busy with the agri-hubs, which we have established, but that too is also opening opportunities for the farmers. We have tried to link our projects together by starting with the government nutrition program.
As you talk about the agri-hubs, you must clarify where are they and which fund are you using, whether rural development is given you that money, So because there's been 5 before technology proper. I was just saying, so that we avoid questions or clarify questions before they can come, because it has been an issue that has been raised. Talk about agri-parks, agri-hubs, and then in some instances we are talking of those things that are in the paper, because rural development has not released money. If you can clarify that, yes.
Okay, thank you, Chair. In fact, Chair, this summary that I'm talking to, all the other slides are actually explaining more what is in the summary. In terms of the agri-hubs, we have established three in the province. The first one is in Dr. J.S. Moroka. It has been completed in terms of infrastructure. We're busy now trying to equip it so that it can start working, and we're also mobilizing farmers around the area so that they can be able to deliver the produce there. The second one is in Bushbuck Ridge. It's currently under construction. We started it around October last year. It also has an it doesn't have an abattoir, the one in Bushbuck Ridge. Then the third one is at Umkhondo, which is Chief Albert Luthuli. That one has an abattoir link to it. It's also under construction. We started in October. We're moving very fast. Our plan is that in terms of the construction, we want to finish this current financial year by June, and then we can start with the equipping of the agri-hubs, because we really want to open markets for them. In terms of rural development, we've had several meetings with the Department of Rural Development. They have agreed that they will assist us with funding, but currently as I'm sitting here, the funds we are using are from the equitable share. We haven't received any funding from them. That's on the agri-hubs. Probably just to indicate, Chair, that our main aim here is that farmers are supplying the government nutrition program, then they will graduate to also supply the hubs, and then finally the international fresh produce market, which is also still under construction, which with its main aim to ensure that we also support international markets. Point number four is to strengthen the involvement of commercial farmers. We have mobilized all our commercial farmers in the province who are doing very well and who are also exporting, to ensure that we link them to the small-scale farmers that we have identified, that we see that they have a potential of growth. Maybe one example that I can utilize, the Jubert and Sians, which are quite known for citrus fruit. They are working with us very closely, and we are pairing them with the smaller scale farmers so that they also assist them and share knowledge. And what is interesting, Chair, here is that they are doing this without charging us as government any funding, but they are assisting in terms of skills and knowledge, We've also paired ourselves with some of the established organization for the, for example, the Bonsmara farmers are also assisting our own farmers in terms of breeding, registration, and all that in, as part of commercial farmers assisting the small-scale farmers in the province. In terms of intensifying production, especially around poultry, we have identified that most of our poultry farmers did not have a market, one, also in terms of the know-how, and also ensuring that they do things the correct way. We have therefore also partnered with the big companies like your AFGRI to assist our poultry farmers in terms of opening the market. But over and above that, they also assist them in training and ensuring that they meet the standards that are there in the market for our farmers. As I move on, Chair, I will also show examples where from the government side we've provided the infrastructure, we've provided all the necessary tools, and then we link with the industry players so that they then capacitate our farmers. Strengthening and increasing partnership with commercial farmers and international investors. Here, we've looked at those investors that are there. We've had an investor session, which is led by our wing, which is MEGA, where we have gone out to the investors, presented our projects to say we have an opportunity as a province. These are the projects that we have. These are the farmers that we have, so that we could be able at some stage to export. I'll also be outlining more on those where we have partnered with some of the companies who are willing to also take some of our products. They've also been in the province to look at those. Enhancing production capacity, especially in communal land, this is a new project that we have started as a department. We have partnered with the House of Traditional Leaders, AMAKOSI, because most of the land in Mpumalanga belongs to AMAKOSI or traditional leaders, and most of that land is not utilized and it's agricultural land. What we have then done, COCTA has bought tractors for them. Then from the side of government, we then said, let's then utilize those tools that already have been given to them as COCTA. We have already started the project. We are now plowing and planting for AMAKOSI. And remember, some of the land within the traditional leaders is also given to the communities. And we have roped in those communities and that land, and we are assisting them to plow and plant. It's a very, very good project, and I think it's going to assist in terms of ensuring that we utilize the land that has been fallow, that is sitting with traditional leaders. Chair, just to indicate that also the traditional leaders have also given us land that we are using for the youth as part of Fortune 40, especially around the area of Ngomazi, and it's working very well. We have promoted the fully-fledged value chain in both animal and vegetable production because we have realized that if we are to plow and plant and then leave, at the end of the day, we have to make sure that we create employment, but we also open opportunities for people. That is why when we go in and support, we look at a fully-fledged value chain for all our farmers, linking them to the industry players, linking them to the commercial farmers, and opening small-scale opportunities, for example, the government nutrition program. In the government nutrition program, we even take a farmer that has only 5 hectares. As long as they produce quality, we then take their things and then buy it through the Department of Education. We're also promoting the new farming models. For example, in the Fortune 40, we have vegetable channels, but in the local farmers general, we're also assisting them. We have water-saving technologies such as drip irrigation and conservative agriculture, very, very critical. We also have other new activities like your pyramid farming, which we have introduced to the committees. Those ones are actually focusing to the elderly, where you talk about food security, because if they plant the leafy vegetables, at least we know that those households are not going to go to sleep without any food. Those are the new technologies that we have started as a department. The issue of drought, we were affected as a province in terms of drought, and we therefore introduced the drought-resistant seeds, commodities. Yes, I need to indicate that they are a bit expensive for us, but it is important that we buy them because it becomes a futile exercise, especially on the areas that we have identified are very dry and we have scarce rain around areas like Bushbuck Ridge where we are really struggling. So there, when we give our farmers, we give them the drought-resistant seeds, And then in the other areas where we do have enough rainfall, like Gersibande, we give them the normal seeds. The support to livestock farmers and improvement of livestock generic pools, we have reopened our Noordgedacht research center, where we are doing research, different genetic research, both on animals and livestock. Our farmers are now having an opportunity to test their soil even before they plant. We are busy talking to the University of Mpumalanga and the University of Natal to assist us, you know, with the students that are doing masters to come and do research in our research center, so that all the things that we do as a department is informed by research. We are improving the research center. We do have information on what we are doing each and every year to ensure that it goes back to the standard in which it was before. These are the different projects that I think I've already spoken to. Now, on the integrated poultry value chain, we just want to indicate that through the grant that we received from National, these are the projects that we have been able to do, partnering with the equitable share that we're getting. We've got about 40,000 environmentally controlled poultry houses. It can accommodate 40,000 chicks, and four of them are in Letolo. We are busy in phase two, which is currently at 95%. We also have one in Mkondo, Siyaphambili. This is a cooperative of the youth in Mkondo, where we have 25,000 chicks times four of those poultry houses. 25,000 chicks times two in Sizanuletu Poultry Cooperative in Gomazi. This cooperative is actually led by women. On this one, 25,000 Sinamuvagwezolimo, which is currently operational, and the last one is in Ligwa. 25,000 chicks by six, which is also operational. These ones we have linked to Goldie, Elibet, Afgri, Supergrand, because we have realized that without the market, these people are not going to survive. Previously, they used to sell just around the community, but they have a certain number which is guaranteed, which is bought by these commercial leaders, and then the rest they can then be able to utilize, sell around their communities. On vegetable value chain, we are indicating the mushroom project. It's also a cooperative. We are saying to date 682 individual farmers, of which 247 are cooperatives, including the Fortune 40 farms, which continue to supply the government nutrition program as of June last year, where we started. The Kwakha Fountain project in Thembisile Hani, as you can see, it's actually a youth-led project, and we are saying the average production capacity of these farms is 212 tons of butternut, 110.5 tons of cabbages, and 104.5 tons of tomatoes. When we started these projects, they were pilot projects, but I think now we can comfortably say they have moved out of the stage of being pilot projects as they are supplying the government nutrition program. We are hoping that once the hubs are finished, then they will also be able to supply the supply.
Sorry, ma'am. I'm saying those, do you pay them in time? Because they might collapse because of not getting payment from the education.
We had challenges previously where they were receiving their payments late. We then formed a task team which has the Department of Education, the Department of Health, ourselves, and MEGA, which is our investment wing, to ensure that they are paid in time. And since then, that problem has been addressed. But in the beginning, yes, there were serious teething problems where our farmers were really struggling to get their money back. On the fruit model, we need to indicate that in terms of Mpumalanga generally, the farms that were doing well in terms of fruits were the commercial farms. We, for the first time now, we can say we have also have, if I may put it that way, black farmers that we are supporting. We have five fruit production projects that we are supporting, Bengisana Apple Orchard and the Sinalo. We also have an agreement with the Pagamani Holland and Julia King in Msugaliga, which in Msugaliga is Mtombeni, in Chief Albert Luthuli. Those are the farms that we are supporting for fruit model, and we have a takeoff agreement with them. We are now working at then putting these fruits again in the government nutrition model. But as you know, they are seasonal, so it depends which fruits are there within that particular season. We're currently working with the Juberton CNs to revitalize the Allendale, Zuknoch, and Tlobube farms, which are youth farms. We've got about 400 hectares where we are trying to assist them now to also plant citrus fruits, different citrus fruits like your mangoes, your lemons, and oranges, with the assistance of the commercial farmers. And then we've got one in Gomazi, where again we are also putting it as a trial project to also plant citrus. Now, with an understanding that, especially on the citrus one, it takes a bit of time, 2.5 years, before you can actually be able to have any harvest. So we're doing a mix where we're also planting the vegetables so that at least it can sustain them as they are waiting for those farms to come to fruition and they are able to harvest. We have the value chain model in terms of export market. We have two farms, Champagne, that are currently, which is a CPA, which we spoke to the Department of Rural Development. It's a CPA. They are already exporting mango and to China, and they have 54 permanent workers and 32 temporal workers and 17 fruit pickers, which are seasonal. Ikwezi is currently supplying Mozambique. Ikwezi was one of our projects which we started from the beginning, and in that one we have 60 jobs that we have created. They are also supplying the local ShopRite. And also to indicate that some of our Fortune 40 farms are also supplying some of the ShopRite and local shops. In terms of Giba, we have visited them. There are 300 jobs that are created there. We're busy working with Griba to try and get them the licenses for them to export. They have 300 people that are employed there. We have brought in the international investors from Oman. They are more than willing to buy their products, but we then discovered that they didn't have the license and there were certain standards that they were not meeting. So the department is really working very hard with them to try and ensure that they meet the standards so that they can be in given an opportunity to export. And we are hoping that by 2019 they should be in a position to export. Already there's an indication in terms of the number of tons that are needed to be exported to Oman. On the agri-hubs, I think, Chair, I've already spoken to them. We have even pictures of they are currently at construction stage. I think we could have provided even pictures that would show how much we have moved on those, and we are looking at a completion in this financial year. On food security, we are saying that we are aligning our food security to Vision 2030 for Mpumalanga, where we are providing production inputs. We are giving the number of households that we have supported through the grant that we are receiving from National, and also in terms of our equitable share. We have also plowed and planted 18,852.9 hectares. We are saying food gardens have also been established. We are also looking at food gardens in schools. We have spoken to the Department of Education. We realize that they have agricultural schools in the province. Those agricultural schools, we have then adopted them, and we have an MSC's flagship project where he's assisting now the agricultural schools in terms of putting up infrastructure in them. We have created 178 jobs through what we call Pesgo Mkono Mlimi project, which is an agricultural project where we are saying to the communities, you need to go back and plow and plant, because that's one of the ways in which you can create jobs. Here we're putting up fences and things like that, and we usually utilize the local communities to assist us. We've got 9 farms which have been provided with livestock in a form of cattle, sheep, and goats through Masbiele Smaini program. We really want to thank the National Department that has assisted us with the vet doctors. We've got 22 of them, which were spread around the province in the rural areas. They are doing very well. They are assisting us because obviously we had a shortage of vet doctors, in our province. So this project is really assisting us. We do have bursaries for the vet doctors, and those that have been given bursaries, we immediately absorb them. On farmer support, we are supporting our farmers, smallholder farmers. We have supported 50 of them, which we have identified for commercialization, including female farmers that we are supporting. We've also supported farmers on 2,000 hectares where we have planted soya beans, maize, and vegetables and fruits. On the soya beans, the 500 hectares was done deliberately. The Department of Education is buying soya beans or dried fruit. Because the province is not very strong on agro-processing, this is a pilot project for us where we're planting soya beans. The whole aim is to then supply the Department of Education. Currently, the Department of Education is still buying the soya beans from service providers. So we are saying as a department, there's no need because we do have fertile land. We can plant soya beans. So we're using our farmers. We've planted the first 500 hectare of soya beans with the plan to harvest, package, and then supply the Department of Education. We do have marketing opportunities where we are partnering with establishing the government nutrition program, our AgriHubs, and the Mpumalanga International Fresh Produce Market, because we know that once the market is complete, we must be ready. That is why all these initiatives. We are supporting our farmers with production inputs, mechanization, infrastructure, and technical advice. We are also providing training on a number of areas on agribusiness management and marketing, and therefore also linking our farmers to the market and providing technical advice. Where we have Farmers Day, where we assist them. On Farmers Day, it's not just only on vegetable production, but also on animal production, where we bring in our vet doctors, they talk to the communities. We've also involved our environmental section. We have a project that we've started with the environmental section to try and teach the communities how to save the environment, but parallel to that, making sure that animals do not end up wandering and eating the wrong things. In terms of the upscaling of production through traditional leaders, AmaKhosi, I think I've already touched on that, Chair, so I'm not going to go to details. I've spoken to that. On the commercial farmers and international investors, just to indicate that we have already undertaken few trips to Oman, Russia, and Cote d'Ivoire in partnership with the DET and the Office of the Premier, and it's yielding results because they would want to buy some of the products which are coming from Mpumalanga with the identified farmers that we are trying to upscale so that they can also have an opportunity to export. The smaller ones are already exporting to Mozambique, because it's one of our nearest countries. On the export market commodities, I've listed the different commodities, your citrus, your subtropical, your poultry, your beef. Those are the different countries that we have already engaged with that are willing to buy from us, and we have already prepared farmers to supply. On job creation, we are saying our Phezukom Mkhono Mlimi project has created 178 jobs. These jobs are continuing because when they put fencing in the different areas, we always, you know, try and get the local communities to do the work. Agricultural infrastructure has also established 40 jobs where we put in small-scale infrastructure like your weight bridges, like your animal handling facilities. We usually utilize the local people. On the land care program, 140 jobs, and in total 380 jobs have been created, and these jobs are always increasing in different areas in terms of the work and the target that we had. I'm not going to talk to the unemployment, which I think we've spoken about, but those are the statistics for the province, and these are the some of the figures that we use as we plan as a department. In terms of the budget, we are saying that on the Ilimaletsima budget, which is a grant from National, we are receiving the budget for Ilimaletsima is 63.7 million. It's broken into two. The 52.2 million is a grant that we get from National, and from the equitable share, we're putting 11.5 million. This is what we received. In terms of expenditure, we spent 63.7 million. million. On the Masbuyeles buy-in, which is the livestock improvement, we have 6 million, which is coming from the equitable share. We spent 4 million. The difference there, Chair, we have asked for a rollover, specifically because we wanted to give our farmers pregnant animals so that they can immediately multiply. When we couldn't get certain sets of those, we therefore requested our treasury to assist us to have the rollover of the difference. On the Fortune 40, we have a budget of 80 million. The 44 is coming from CASP, and the 36 is coming from the equitable share. In total, for the budget, we have 149.7 million, of which 147.8 million has been spent, which is 99%. The difference that is there is the rollover that we have requested Treasury to give us on the animals that are pregnant that we want to give our farmers. This is a breakdown in terms of how much land has been planted, what is the target per land, the area that has been planted, and what we have achieved as a department. We are saying our annual target was 14,000. We have planted 18,000, which is more than what we have planned. The rationale behind that, one, is the interest that has been created, because this program is actually driven also by the MEC himself. We have created a lot of interest. We had more requests, but over and above, the partnership has really assisted us, because we have partnered with Grain SA, and they are assisting us a lot in terms of bringing in training interventions and farmer days and all that. So we've seen it that it's really working very well when we partner with them. There's the pictorial presentation of the number of hectares cultivated and planted. We are doing a comparison on the different areas and how much was the plant and how much it has increased. On the food gardens and school gardens, as I've indicated, Chair, that we are also targeting school gardens. Those are the different districts that we have in the province, and the figures, we're saying 500 schools, and then communal and household 1,500, and we have achieved 1,983 as a target. In terms of the annual performance, Chair, I don't know whether you'd want me to read this, but we have attached more information with the breakdown of each household, what was the target, what was the provincial target, what have we done. So all the slides that follow the two are explaining that. If I can be allowed to move too quickly to slide number 30 on Masbuyeles buy-in, which is the livestock one, we are indicating that those are the different farms and the projects that we have given, which talks to cattle, which talks to dairy cattle, which also talks to goats and pigs. Those are the different sets that we give to the communities, and then in each community we then try and link the vet technicians and the vet nurses, and then we have one vet doctor within around that particular municipality. We've clubbed them according to the different municipalities so that they can assist those communities that we have supplied with the livestock. We have attached information on those slides, number 30, 31, 32. Then on the Fortune 50, which is the Young Farmer Incubation Program, we are indicating that on the 14 farms that we have developed, they are in different areas in terms of the different production that is taking place in those farms. I think we have spoken a lot about that particular program in terms of the young farmers that have been brought to agriculture. Maybe, Chair, to indicate that currently we have approached the Department of Public Works, where we realize that they also have farms that they are not utilizing. They've agreed to hand over those farms. We're now in the process. We've evaluated 15 of them. There are more, but we have evaluated 15 of them, which we are planning to also utilize as part of the Fika Tlala and the CAFS project through the grant that we get from National. Those are the pictures that I've attached. I think it makes it easy to see what we are doing. On the mechanization, slide number 42, those are the tractors that we are utilizing in the different municipalities. We do want to indicate that they are not enough, but we are trying to utilize the commercial farmers who are assisting us to also plow and come in to ensure that we do meet the numbers and the targets that we have put in place. Commercialization of smallholder farmers, we have indicated before that we have 50 that we have identified and want by the, within 5 years to ensure that they are also at a commercial status. Recruitment of vet officers, we are indicating that we had 3 that were bursary holders which we have absorbed. We do know that there is a moratorium in the province, but we then requested Cabinet to allow us to absorb those that were bursary holders. And I think I've indicated before that we have 22 of the CCS vet doctors that we receive from National that are assisting us. We have given the summary of the vet staff complement under slide number 48. And then the management of animal diseases, slide number 50. We are saying that the province has really had a number of outbreaks, about 11. But you must also remember, Honorable Chair and members, that we are next to Kruger National Park, so the buffaloes are always giving us problem with foot and mouth, especially for our cattle around the Bushbuck Ridge area. So every time we have to make sure that we manage the foot and mouth disease, but we are looking at those different diseases. We are doing continuous surveys on the foot and mouth disease, TB, avian flu, and the rest of those diseases which are a challenge, especially in our province, with the current staff complement that we have. We have attached the planting plans for the 2018 and 19 financial year on slide number 53, where we've broken down the hectares per household and how much land we'll plow, how many food gardens we'll support, and also looking at continuously assessing through the studies in terms of how we are doing as a province and what are the challenges in terms of ensuring that there is food security for all in the province. Those are the targets per district and the commodities that we are looking at in slide number 57. Those commodities have been categorized according to the different regions where we know that these ones will grow and these are the areas and this is where the soil is capable to accommodate those different kinds of commodities. Rehabilitation of agricultural lands, land number 59, very, very critical. We are busy with ensuring that we identify those lands that need to be rehabilitated, where we have alien species that are invading the land. We already know where and what type of species are there. We've already started the project to ensure that we get rid of these alien species. Slide number 62, I've attached the different areas and what hectares and what type of vegetation that needs to be looked at and needs to be removed. We are attaching pictures of the different areas where we are removing the alien species and the role players in the different areas that we are partnering with as a department. Slide number 69 just gives more examples of the farmers that we have supported, both small-scale farmers where we are saying as Mpumalanga, each and every corner or land that is there, we're trying to encourage farmers to just do agriculture, even if it could be not even hectares, you know, gardens, small gardens around your area where we are providing production inputs. And I think, Chair, we would like to just indicate that, yes, of course, we do have challenges in terms of the budget to commercialize more farmers, in terms of mechanization where we are saying we don't have enough tractors and they are breaking down, and also in terms of the weather and the short planting season in some of our areas. But we are saying that we've put up mitigation plans where we are encouraging our farmers to practice conservation agriculture. We are also looking at training our mechanics. We have a program that we are starting this year where we are training mechanics. And by the way, the 2 colleges that were given to us, which is Marapiane and Elijah Mango, Marapiane, we've already started training in partnership with Cotton SA, where the cotton farmers have undertaken training. So it is up and running. We have reopened it. We are also looking at increasing capacity in municipalities with the shortest planting season and continuously advising farmers to use the drought-resistant seeds, so that we can curb the whole problem of drought. We are saying that every space in Mpumalanga is also an agricultural site, so we are encouraging all the farmers, and as we encourage the farmers, it has developed a lot of interest, which is now putting a burden to us in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the funding and the funds for us to be able to implement our projects. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, HOD. We want to welcome the presentation and acknowledge that you are the only province that has started to implement the president's call on empowering the smallholder farmers. And I know that HDG said too. And KwaZulu-Natal came here and raised that let me say to you are the second or you are the first, you are the best, which we want to acknowledge, because our belief is that as long as these farmers that were supporting and building, they don't get support from our budget as government, they'll never grow. And I hope you are buying. You know, the other problem that we face as we're going overside was on the arrangement that department is making for the smallholder farmers, Abu Woolworth, Abu Shoprite, and Tiger Brand. The question has been that whether those people, are they not abusing our farmers, buying less, unlike if it was a commercial farmer, they were going to pay more. So and we said department need to play that role of making sure that the price, that as you negotiate for our farmers, we look at the price that they are selling on, and at the standard that will not make farmers not to make profit. So I think we want to welcome that. Actually, I'm doing this summarizing the input of the acknowledging the important things that they've raised, because they thought if they report on what I've asked them to report only, we might not take them serious. So they bring all these nice things so that I'm acknowledging them, so that members should not be tempted to go into them. We must focus on the plans for their APP for Fetatala. As we have requested them to do. So you are doing a very good job, HOD, but it was going to be helpful for members to discuss as you have responded to our question directly. Honorable members, that was the presentation from the HOD, and I'll start with Honorable Papa this time. Honorable Tongwane, Honorable Mapanga, Honorable Cheu, Honorable Mwabe, Honorable, I couldn't read your Robinson, yes, and Honorable State. So let's start with you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair.
Then you have only 10 minutes to ask question and answer, unless you want to eat your lunch. So,
mine are very brief, Chair. One, for that reason, I'll limit my comments. Although with the Mpumalanga, when you come from another province, you have got two options: to be jealous or to be proud, or have both, because there's indication that there are trying their best to make use of available natural resources in the province. Let me hold it there for now on that part. But now, I'll also be interested, how far are these products, this human product from the these 40, first 40, where are they now? And then secondly, there are the tractors from COCTA, which how much is agriculture involved in the maintenance of these tractors so that they don't disappear, including the sustainable management, so that they must not keep on losing value and then you dispose and you lose the number that you require for the production. I also suspect that you are underrating on the creating of jobs. I was comparing the slide 12, 21, and 63. It seems to me that not all that is involved there is you culturate as part of creation of jobs, and you might underrate the performance of the province there. Do you have any use of service providers? And definitely not from the conditional grant. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 17, bullet point 7, the trainings that are provided, are they accredited or are they just knowledge enhancement? And the other question, Chair, the presenter mentioned giving drought-resistant seed to farmers. Now, I just wanted to check with her if, in your observation, what were the results in terms of cropping? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairman. Let me also welcome the presentation and commend the good work done by the province. Chair, let me also say that I do concur with the saying which says that izazi vela eMpumalanga. A wise man come from the east. Keep on holding and leading the entire country.
That you don't make remarks.
Okay,
you don't have time.
No, I don't know. I remember Honorable Kapa. She did mention that when coming to Mpumalanga, you might. Maybe. Okay. Thanks, Chair. On slide 6, I just want to find out on the issue of the employment in the agriculture sector, what has been the cause for the decline and what proposed methods are there to ensure improvement in this sector? And my greeting to slide 22, why the unemployment rate is increasing in Dibalising instead of decreasing like in the other local municipalities. Lastly, Chair, on slide 52, since the department is unable to recruit permanent extension practitioner due to the moratorium, how do you propose the current situation be dealt with? And when will the moratorium be lifted? And whose responsibility is it? As I conclude, Chair. Which page is this one?
The time expired. Honorable Chair.
Okay, the last one, Chair, I'm sorry, Chair.
No.
When will the upper term?
No. No, no, your time has expired. Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is based on women. Commercialization of farmers, I think we need to know the statistics. You know that poverty in South Africa affects mostly women. And, yeah, Chair, before I go any further, I want to just appreciate what the province has done to appoint an HOD who is a woman. And it shows that when women are focused, there is progress. I mean, I'm happy with the presentation that has been given, and it has proven that when we say women deliver, they do deliver. I want to talk about commercialization of farmers. Ma'am, you have to do a full value chain. With poultry in Gauteng, it has shown that they have been given those farms, but they are squashed at the beginning. They're not given the feed, it's expensive. If they make profit at the end of the day, they're not making much. And you must remember that the market is those households which you have to you have to engage. If they are squashed somewhere, open new markets for your farmers. So there is no way that our people will not have markets. There are markets within African communities. And then the issue of the new farms that you say you're going to investigate, I hope you're not going to still use the old special, you call it what? Special framework, the apartheid special framework. You're going to come up with a new objective. If it is it's government space, it has to pull a number of people into there so that you remove hunger in its totality. You see, so those 40, I think you said 40 farms that you have found, those 40 farms, we expect you to create a value chain in terms of piggery, even the products. The last product has to be created because that's where most of the money is made. It's not at the producing of pigs, but the end product, the bacons and all that, you need to create more jobs. You need also to create the market for our people there. So even as I think I agree with the other member that says in terms of job creation, you have given us lesser numbers than you should have given us the numbers. I don't agree with the million that you say you will create by 2030. You would have created more because you're dealing with agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I raised my hand not because I want to ask a question per se, but to give a credit to Mpumalanga. I'm both jealous and proud as a member of the National Assembly. Well, I'm jealous because I was not here when my province was present.
Can I stop you because I don't want to lose comments? I've done it on your behalf. So why do you want to repeat it?
Yeah,
I've done it on your behalf because...
Yes, Chair, but what I want to say as I conclude is that the report gives a conclusive picture of how agriculture is being handled in the province. And I'm happy that it covers each and every sector in the agricultural environment, even the issues of traditional leaders, because those are the people who've got the land. It's also covered. And youth affairs are also covered. And I think it should be the gospel of our government that it plays from Konum Lim. Thank you.
Honorable Sting? Oh, no. Honorable Robinson, no. No, we don't have that.
We don't have that, okay.
The lady first is me.
Ladies first.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Lady, yes.
Okay. Are you the first lady?
Yes.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. And thanks to Mpumalanga. Being the place where the sun rises and my hometown, it's nice to know that Vele Slangani Pilet, you know, that's Vele Mpumalanga. So, so it's nice to know that there's progress, and it's nice to know that MEC Shongwe is taking this particularly seriously. I know he was always very approachable and the police and security cluster. So I'm hoping changes will happen, and this presentation looks very good, and I'm proud to say that I'm from Mpumalanga. Again, I just want to say that there are a couple of things that I need clarity on. Yes, ma'am.
You've eaten your time by placing Mpumalanga. When I've said I've done it on your
Well, how much time do I have left?
You don't have any.
30 seconds. Okay, all right. Okay, so...
You don't have seconds. Gone.
Is it finished now?
Yes.
Really?
You've been praising Mpumalanga, and I told you don't do that.
Oh, no, you didn't tell me. You told the previous speaker.
No, no. No, you're not listening then.
There are some serious points that I'd like
okay.
to raise that is
but
beneficial.
You have 1 minute.
Okay, all right. The tractors. Temisile, 34 tractors. JS Morocco, 45 tractors. Nkomazi, 58 tractors. Bushbuck Ridge, 99 tractors. 90% of them are not working because of things like batteries that have gone missing, tire repairs, alternators that have broken, diesel that's non-existent, and the list goes on. When I went to go and visit these areas, the people that worked there simply said, we haven't got the budget. So how is it that you're preparing to lemur all of this land if the very substance of which you need to use is broken? And we can't say it's not broken because it's a fact. 90% of those tractors are not working. It's a big, big problem. Then we speak of the KMIA airport, and now they were speaking specifically of being able to export fruit, local growers fruit, which is a fantastic concept, but we've got an international already. But you can see the value that I'm bringing to this meeting, Honorable Chair. Okay. All right, thank you. So if you could answer why it is that the tractors are broken, year in and year out and year in and year out, yet you guys are talking about wonderful results that you're planning on doing, I'd like that question answered. Thank you.
You can write that if you still another have question, you can write it and then we'll give it to them and they'll submit it in writing.
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Chair, luckily I'm not from Mpumalanga, so no praises from me. I'm happy that to see the Marapuyane Agricultural Colleges. I'm worried that it's not in the presentation. I didn't see it because that was one of my questions. I'll send someone there to go and check if it is functional because I don't just take things that I'm being told. I actually check all the time. But thank you. I'm glad it's up and functioning. Yes, I'm going to send you, Chair. Yeah. Tinam, what is that? Tinam.
I'm giving you an answer. It's working. It's
good. Thank you, Chairperson. All right. Chairperson, my other concern is I don't see any of the things that we visited on our oversight in here. The one, maybe I'm missing, the Huffington Packhouse. I'm checking specifically under agri hubs. It's not yet. If it's still under construction, I'm concerned because you said, and I wrote down and I checked back, 30 March, you said that on the 27th of March in 2017, 30 March is the handover. I don't know what's going on. Is it open? Is it not? Is it what? Then that maize mill in Kumasi that we went to visit that was also in construction at that time, I would like to find out if that is under construction, and then I want to praise you to say that I'm very glad that you work with Grain SA. All other commodity groups are doing similar things to assist, and I think it's time DG, on behalf of the DG, that we partner with the commodity groups because they have the expertise, they are willing to help, but they don't always just know where to find the farmers. It's time that we do that. We can't just, as a department, work on our own thing. Then I want to find out, Mpumalanga, do you have petrol money for your veterinarians? How many kilometers can they travel a month? I know that there's blockages on others, so Mpumalanga, can you travel? And how did the outbreak of bird flu affect your bird houses that you are talking about, because I see the Chairperson, bird flu is up and running again, flying. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable
honorable members for the questions. Mpumalanga, you have, actually you don't have any minutes because it's 1 o'clock now. So I'm going to give you 10 minutes to respond to all the questions that have been raised. So, and just to indicate that, Honorable Stein, if you remember, we said that all the oversized projects that we have visited, the department, national department, when they come on quarterly basis, they must bring the feedback on what has been done in those projects. So I'm just reminding you of that, so that the focus of today was on Ulimalizima, Fetzatlhahla. So that's why I've tried to explain it when I was taking your time. So I just wanted to bring that picture so that we are able to deal with those issues at the right meeting where we'll have at least little time to deal with those specific projects in that context. So, Honorable Robinson, you want to? Okay.
Honorable Chair, thanks. I just wanted to know if you said we can ask, we could ask questions in writing. Do we write it to them or do we write it to the ministry?
You write it to me, I'll give it to them
thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue of Fortune 40 farms, where are they now? They are all productive. They are supplying SPA, they are supplying a number of areas and also the government nutrition program. On the issue of COCTA, yes, we were not involved initially, but we then took the initiative because we knew that we have a lot of land that is sitting with Amakhosi. So we are busy working with them. In terms of the repairs of their tractors, we are now training our own mechanics as a department, so that they also assist in fixing those tractors, because we are using those tractors not just only to plow for the traditional leaders, but for the communities around where the traditional household is. On the issue of the jobs, the numbers that you see, they are only for Fetzatlhahla. So our numbers obviously are big, but we only limited them to the presentation on Fetzatlhahla. So we do have jobs that we have created with the other grants. On the service providers, we're not using any service providers except for the ones that we're buying seeds from. It's our own officials on the ground that are working directly with the farmers. Only on the Fortune 40 where we have incubators that are shadowing or assisting our young farmers. On the training, yes, we are using accredited training for our farmers. And in terms of the drought resistant seeds, we have seen the increase in the number of tons. If you remember the previous year, we had a serious challenge, especially on maize, where we, in the areas where we were affected by drought. So now, in terms of the number of tons, when they harvested, they've increased because those seeds are able to stand the area, and to stand the weather, I'm sorry. On the decline in agriculture, generally, in the province as a whole, there has been a decline in agriculture, but I must say that people are now going back to agriculture because we're trying to, you know, talk to people and make them see that in terms of food security, this is also one of the areas that can assist them, especially those that are unemployed and also the elderly and the women. The decrease in unemployment rate in Tipele, saying there's quite a number of issues that are attributed to the decrease in unemployment. I wouldn't be in a position to actually outline that. I think I can submit that information to you, Chair. What are the causes for that decrease? The issue of the moratorium, this was a cabinet pronouncement, but what we have done as a department, we've gone to cabinet and requested that we be allowed to employ the vet nurses, some of the agricultural specialists and the vet doctors. We were given permission in a specialized field, but on the other posts we were not given permission. We don't know when it's going to be listed, but we are taking it as it comes in terms of the specialized field where we feel there is a need for us to be able to employ. On the issue of commercialization of farmers, we do have the full value chain. We have also included women in the commercialization of farmers. Currently, we even have one lady that is supplying China as we are sitting here. I might not have included it because it's not funded through FITSATSALA, but on macadamia that we are assisting to also open up the markets for them. The very same rationale for us to establish our own government nutrition system and our own hubs is to also open markets for our farmers. The new farms that we are creating, I think I need to emphasize that it's 15 that we have now evaluated, and the previous ones were 12 that are currently under production. So the 15 farms that we have evaluated, we are getting them, part of them, some of them belong to us, some of them belong to Rural Development, others are from the Department of Public Works. So we've done a thorough evaluation. Those are existing farms that are lying fallow. We want to do the same thing that we've done with Fortune 40 and place the youth there and then try and develop the farms to also create jobs. The issue of the tractors, it has been a serious problem for the department. We do acknowledge that it has been a challenge. But what we have done, we have partnered with some of the commercial farmers and just farmers around that do have tractors to assist us with the plowing. But parallel to that, we then realized that we're spending a lot of money on the repairs and they will break. So we have started a training program now to train our own artisans to be farmer, to be tractor mechanics, so that they maintain those farms on the farm, on site. I think we already have about 8 that have completed who are already working, but we're trying to increase the number in the new financial year. I would actually touch on the issue of KMIA Airport. We had to talk to KMIA because if we are to achieve the export, we need them. We undertook a trip through the Department of Economic Development to Germany last month, where we are looking at bringing in cargo planes that will land at KMIA so that we can be able to export our produce from agriculture. Maybe, Honorable Chair, I'm wearing 2 hats. I'm also acting in the Department of Economic Development. So it helped me to then utilize that platform to ensure that we do engage KMIA to bring in those things. So it's still at initial stages, I need to indicate, because Oman also wants to land their planes there. We're still at an initial stage, but it's getting there. We're trying to prepare the ground so that we can be able to have some of the cargo coming from there. The issue of Marapiane, Chair, I think I need to explain. We have opened Marapiane, but we're using it as a training college. So you won't find students like before housed full-time as and when we do training. For example, the partnership that we did with Cotton SA, we then brought in the farmers. They trained them. I think it was about 4 weeks. If I'm not wrong, about 50 farmers. So there's that activity, different training programs that are taking place, because we have realized that now that we have a university in Mpumalanga that's very strong in agriculture, but not everyone has got a grade 12 and not everyone has got access to university education. Some of the farmers have been there. They can farm, but they just need those technical know-how. So we have short programs for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 week, which does not necessarily need a grade 12 or a university entrance. And then the young ones that do have the university entrance, we're assisting them to get bursaries to go to the University of Mpumalanga. On the issue of Huntington Pack House, that pack house has been completed. We have linked it to the government nutrition program. It was done by our sister department, the Department of Rural Development. It is there. Our farmers are utilizing it to package their produce before they submit to the government nutrition program. On the Gobazi maize mill, it was there. It was one of the old projects. So what we have done, we have revived it. It has been renovated. We've put in a borehole, which was one of the challenges. There was no water around that area. The borehole is there. We have also ordered the machine, which will help us to process the maize from the local communities. So we are confident that in this financial year it will definitely be working. But our key main problem with that one was the issue of water. So we've put in a borehole, and there was also the bridge.
the bridge that we've also upgraded so that we are able to enter there. The issue of the vets, currently they are utilizing our transport from the department, but
your
I wouldn't
time
know.
Finished.
Okay, that was the last one, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, HOD, and you can then submit those that you have not answered in writing. We'll circulate to the members. Unfortunately, we don't have a way out on this, the time issues. Thank you very much, Mpumalanga. Well done, and the report, please, the report of all the projects that we've visited and the challenges that have been identified, how you have resolved them. They have, when the department comes for the quarterly meetings, they must bring those reports until we are convinced that all those issues that were raised by members have been addressed. And thank you very much. And the people of Mpumalanga can see that you've got a lot of smile today. Honorable members from Mpumalanga, they are just lucky, even if it's not necessary. They're enjoying the news from Mpumalanga. Well done, Mpumalanga. Thank you very much. We are supposed to receive the report from the department. So we don't have time, we'll have to reschedule. We'll see how we put it on your agenda, acting DG and the DM. We want to apologize. It's not our making, it's a program of the constraint that we find ourselves in. But we'll reschedule the presentation, because it will then conclude the issues of APPs and how the department has planned its work for the next financial year and how it has performed in the last financial year. And thank you very much for coming. That was the end of our item, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you.